Some cults are good, most cults are bad, but I'll tell you what really makes me sad. I can't decide which cult to join. If only there were a podcast out there to rank all the cults using some sort of bracket system like they do for basketball playoffs for college teams. It's madness, madness.
People try to put us down.
Talking about my generation.
Just because I get around. Talking about my generation.
Things. My microphone just slipped.
Oh,
I rocked out too hard.
You rocked out too hard. No, you get it. And you spin it around and around.
I was windmilling like insanely.
Exactly. There we go.
Jump and cram.
Thank you for tuning in this week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. We'll not be talking about our generation.
No, our generation. We'll be talking about other
people's
generation.
The middle child of all generations.
That's it.
She's the Prince Charles generation. Whatever.
That's it.
Wow. Ouch.
That's it. The generation that played outside while our parents got inside getting divorced.
Exactly.
I played inside and my parents didn't get divorced.
Hey!
We figured, that was so much simpler than I thought.
Yeah.
Aaron didn't play outside much. But
no, I didn't. I threw up if I played outside.
Yeah, I was one that was outside.
But I was still pretty young when my parents were getting a divorce,
yeah,
so I needed, like, supervised play. So.
Also true. Well, you know, we're still here, not having intergenerational beefs with anyone, because someone has to make dinner.
Somebody's got to fucking go pick up the kids.
That's it. Welcome to Gen X. Welcome to Madness
and
Madness.
Welcome to Madness Madness.
The podcast brought to you by tired, bored Gen Xers who need somebody else to help them come up with activities.
Love of Christ. Will somebody give me a break?
I know. It's like I'm planning and cooking all the meals. I'm scheduling all the activities. I just want a little help.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you. Please. So, yeah, it's good.
Okay. Wow. That was a lot came out real quick there.
Yeah.
That's all right.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's because we're hot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're hot and sexy, but it's like fucking like, murder hot outside.
Also the kind
you know what's
of
worse being Gen X? Being hot.
Hot.
While you're Gen X.
Hot.
And I realize that we might get repetitious because we start out every podcast with, it's hot, but.
If you've ever been to Oklahoma in the summer, it's really hot.
You know.
And it horns in on our favorite activity, which is sitting on the porch.
Exactly.
It is too hot to sit on the goddamn porch.
See, that's what
that's
it is.
That should tell you something.
We're cranky and cabin fevery because we can't even go outside.
We can't even sit on the porch.
Also, I've been working from home, and let me tell... Well, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, look. Anyway.
Anyway, well, that's why Brian Extra, especially amongst all of us, needs the more activities because he's tired of sitting. So, yes, I'm Amanda.
I'm Aaron.
I'm back to school this week, and I won't even tell you how many kids have already been sent home for COVID. Yay!
Thankfully, the library is still mostly closed.
And yeah, so. Your library is, and I'm glad for you for that.
Yep.
Nobody's allowed in my house.
No, it's also true.
Except for me.
That's right. We know where you've been.
That's right. You hose me down with...
Yes.
Wait a second.
You do know where I've been.
I do. And it, God damn it.
God damn it. I mostly stay in my office.
Cool.
Yeah, I blame you.
So, I don't know. Other than, like, heat and malaise, then...
any possum news?
No possum news.
I saw
news.
A toad frog in the yard.
Oh, wait. Possum alert.
I think I saw the same possum crossing the street earlier, like, in the evening the other day.
Cannot stay out of the road.
No, but they were on the move. They were not stopping. Not running around
not
in a
circle.
Because you know what a skinny, kind of unwell possum looks like.
Yes,
you do.
And Brian was like up close.
He was up close.
I did.
Possum null.
Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, the possum might be okay.
Yay!
Let's just go ahead and agree that the possum is fine.
The possum's fine. The possum's okay.
The
possum was just having a little rough patch.
It was hung. Over.
Exactly.
Oh, God,
shit,
seriously.
If I were out in the middle of the street, I'd be walking around in circles.
Oh, God, bless.
Yeah,
how did I get out here and how did I get back?
I would be actively trying to get hit by a car.
It's so hot on my feet. Like tiny naked feet.
Yes. So
let's see. There was a toad frog in my yard, and
my cat ate a grasshopper.
It is all good, man.
It's good.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm still waiting for our listener from Lisburn, Northern Ireland to weigh
complain.
In with corrections, complaints, and retractions.
Okay. We're still sending out love to
Debbie,
South African super fan who may or may not live near where the octopus teacher lives. She does not. I was confused.
It's fine. But turns out it's South Africa's kind of a big place.
It's a big place, and there's a lot of ocean.
It's like a whole country.
It's like super beachiness and stuff.
That's bonkers.
Oh, it is. So, yeah, we've given love to all of our Madness friends all around the world.
Especially you, Isle of Man.
Especially you, Isle of Man.
Since the message comes from Douglas, Isle of Man, mm-hmm. I'm just calling you Douglas
Just going to call you Douglas. All right. And shout out to Rob Halpert. I follow his Instagram, and I enjoy checking out his posts. I get the feeling that he would be very much interested in this evening's.
That's right.
This evening's activity.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah. I'd love to hear all this hit him when he was a kid.
Yes, mm-hmm. definitely. Damn. Because he is right that age. And and this is just his set. So
that's right. Well,
because today on Madness, we are bringing you something that has never actually occurred on Madness.
Mm-hmm.
Our two groups tonight that are matched up to fight one another
are
a group that actually fought one another. Right. They fought them on the beaches in a very way that upset
there
the older people.
Blood, toil, sweat, and tears.
They fought them on the beaches.
And they fought them on the beaches.
And they were arrested.
We were arrested on the beaches. We were arrested near the beaches.
We were arrested in the arcades.
We were arrested at the pie and mash shop.
We were arrested beneath the pier.
On the Dodgems.
It's on the Dodgems. And at the penny machine. Because today we are bringing you British post-war madness, the Mods versus the Rockers. They're rocking. Aaron and I had a great time doing our research for this because in a lot of things we were watching the same documentaries, but I'm like fast forwarding over the Mod part.
I know, and afterwards I was like, yeah, I guess I should have done that too. But I was not paying as much attention.
That's right. So
I did not retain anything.
I don't know anything about them. Yes.
So
I read and I watched, and you probably didn't read as many, like, I read a bunch of motorcycle websites as well. There's lots of motorcycle, like, websites that talk about the history of the club and then, like, the machines themselves. Well, let's get right into it. I am the Rockers.
I am the Mods.
Starting off right here. We're glaring at each other.
I'm also furiously combing my hair.
Whipped cream. Quiff. So, yes. Post-war Britain.
What a place.
The Blitz was tough, y'all. And even in places that did not entirely get flattened by the Luftwaffe, it was still kind of tough.
Because everything else was flattened by the...
right. It's like, well, our house didn't, but every other house in the neighborhood had.
And the shops.
And all the shops. So, but even after the war was over, there was still a lot of rationing and rebuilding and stuff like...
1954,
yes. And there was also a baby boom. Not a surprise.
Yes.
And a lot of these kids grew up in actual bombed-out Georgian townhomes.
And they would until the 70s.
Right, playing in mud flats full of rubble, raised by parents and grandparents who'd lived through two world wars and dreamed of the day they could move their families into brutalist high-rises.
Someday!
There'll be a concrete high-rise, and I can live in there with plumbing and running water.
Hot water.
And a toilet
inside.
In the house. It needs to be in the house because you're on like the 50th floor. But that's another thing. But it was great. It was better than it was. Thanks to the WI.
That's right.
It was like everybody needs running water in their house.
This is just like sanitary. I mean, it's just
basic sanitation.
Look,
it's not even a luxury. I want to wash my hands before I cook the
London,
food.
You know, from dirty water, okay?
For sure. But yes, by the 60s, those baby boom kiddos were teenagers and things were finally on the up.
Mm-hmm.
There was more jobs, more money, better quality of life. The sun was just about to set on the British Empire, but not quite yet.
Northern Ireland.
There's still some brown people you've got to oppress. But that's okay. They'll come to London and look for jobs. Don't beat them up. Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, anyway. But one of the reasons that it was so great to be a teen was that in 1957, the National Service ended. And after that, young people weren't forced into the army or to do some kind of national service.
Yes.
And this gave the young people freedom in a lot of ways, significantly and specifically the freedom to have not been through basic training and indoctrinated into a military mindset.
From age 17?
Yes. From like as soon as you left school at 16, then you went into the military. I've said here, and I will say several times throughout this, all of my research... this week made me want to watch Monty Python again.
Yes.
Because I got a lot more insight into
I know, right?
It. Specifically, and I rewatched it several times, there's a little 45-second clip of... It's like gay soldiers doing a doing a drill routine in a square.
Uh-huh.
And it's fucking hysterical. It's like, ooh, get her. 2, 3, 4. I'll scratch your eyes out. Don't look at me, you military fairy. But it was very good. Lots of Monty Python. Think about like women with aprons and
yes,
stuff like
I know.
That.
I was like, every time I have yes. to, I don't know, I was talking to Brian about it, like post-war England. I was like, just use like everyone on Monty Python. That's how they looked. That's how exactly. That's how post-war
that's
England
how they all look. That's what the houses look like. That's what their clothes look like.
I was just thinking Terrence Stamp.
Oh, yes, there you go.
Literally everyone looks like Terrence Stamp. Every man is
sexy
about,
Terrence
like,
Stamp. Haggard Terrence Stamp. Lady Terrence
exactly.
Stamp.
Exactly.
One.
It's like there's one action figure. It just has different outfits.
Just keep changing
the Terrence Stamp action figure.
Yeah, this lack of national service did also create a massive generation gap.
It did.
As we'll see. But it is important to understand that this was a big part of where these kids are coming from culturally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. And that's the mods and the rockers.
The mods and the rockers.
A number of teen fads and fashions had sprung up, as they are wont to do. But we are here to examine one in particular that had its foundation in the 50s culture of disenfranchised 50s American culture
yes.
of disenfranchisement, because they were black,
mm-hmm.
and good old rock and roll.
Yeah.
Sometimes known as...
Also brought to you by black people.
Also brought to you by black people. Ton Up. They were sometimes known as Ton Up, T-O-N, Ton Up boys,
uh-huh.
because ton is an old British word that means to go 100 miles an hour.
Oh.
So they were Ton Up boys because they were trying to get their machines to go 100 miles an hour.
That's, wow.
Yeah.
Safe.
Oh, yeah. Mm. There were no speed limits on the roads at that time.
Well, there's also no roads straight enough in the entire country.
Yeah, they were like building the highways at this time, the motorways.
Right, uh-huh. But mostly they are known as the Rockers. No, not fucking Barbie and the Rockers, who are so no. Dollar Tree gem. I never had a moment. I am a gem fan and be glad I'm not sidebarring here. I'm not.
Okay.
But the Rockers. And to understand the Rockers, you first need to know about the Teddy Boys.
Yes.
Teddy Boy.
Pay attention because you also need to know about the Teddy Boys for the for, mods.
Exactly. And again, feel free to jump in. I feel kind of bad going first because I am going to cover some of the same stuff.
No, it's okay.
I'm, sure you
I'm glad you're covering some of the stuff and then I can hit on it later.
Exactly. And like, I think you have more to say about the National Service.
I do have more
stuff.
To say about
okay,
National
good.
Service.
So you guys are going to learn so much tonight.
Oh my God.
Thanks
God.
For tuning in. So yes, Teddy Boy subculture started in London teens in the early 50s and spread across the UK. Once again, they had the American rock and roll, the Carl Perkins, Elvis,
mm-hmm.
Gene Pitney. I heard a lot about Gene Pitney.
Oh,
my
yeah.
God! Yo, Gene Pitney was a
town
who shot
Liberty Valance. It isn't very pretty, what a town without pity.
They also loved Gene Vincent.
Gene Vincent.
Bebop Balula, she's my baby.
So all the very best of the early rock. None of that Pat
it's
Boone.
Fucking Eddie Cochran.
Yes, they were
yes.
super into Eddie Cochran.
Yes.
That one Eddie Cochran song slaps.
It's called
so good.
Rebel Run.
Ooh. Dun,
I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of. Dun, no, something dun. Else is the one I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Telstar. I heard several guys that were
oh,
mentioned
yeah.
talk about Telstar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all that good stuff, man.
Amanda.
Yes.
Can you tell me why they were called Teddy Boys?
I can tell you why they were called Teddy Boys. They were called Teddy Boys because their clothing was, after the war, tailors mm-hmm. went back to making their usual suits and things that they had made before,
mm-hmm.
Like the Eton uniforms, tight trousers, longish coats, mm-hmm. waistcoats, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This used to be only like Etonian sort of chaps wore
yes.
these clothes, but now several things happened. One was many people had gotten used to wearing nice clothes while they were in the army and had nice army clothes to wear.
Yes.
And so they wanted a different little style. And also, there was a lot of cheaper fabrics.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of... They made all these... Like, I made a bunch of these Etonian suits. Oh, nobody's buying them.
Okay.
So then they kind of dumped those into the menswear outlets.
Yeah.
And they were more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And they started liking the styles. It was the Daily Express named them Teddy Boys because Teddy is short for Edwardian.
Yeah.
But they're Edwardian style clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Edwardian
fancy.
Teddy. Right. So that's why they were called the Teddy Boys. They like drape jackets that were like zoot suits. They started asking for them to be made in fancier, brighter colors.
Yes.
Like velvet cuffs and collars.
After the war, everything is brown and gray.
Yeah, and they're like, could you make this in purple? And they're like, sure.
Could I have one color, please?
Just a smidgen of color as a treat. Perhaps a tad of luxury fabric, just maybe a little around bit. The edge. They also liked bolo ties and Slim Jim ties. Mm-hmm. The clothes they wear now, I think that if we look, if you just showed a snapshot of somebody, they would say they're like rockabilly clothes.
Yeah.
It's a more stylized 50s. It's not like, you know, what our dad wore when he was a small child in the 50s.
Which was like mattress sticking overalls.
Right. Well, even older when he's trying to be, you know, like, I have Levi's and a white t-shirt and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they wanted, they wanted fancier. They wore the big Oxfords, the brothel creepers, the big soled shoes.
Uh-huh.
Big soled shoes, and they liked the big greased up quiff hair, like, but like out of control. I one time in the 80s, I saw a bunch of Asian guys who had the biggest pompadours I have ever seen in my entire
life. How do you do that?
Like, how do you even do that? It's like your hair is standing straight up and then combed over.
Mm.
So huge quiffs. Yeah. So that was what they did. And so those were the Teddy Boys. The Beatles were Teddy Boys when they were young.
Yes. That's right. Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Try and imagine John Lennon with Elvis hair because it's really funny.
It is funny. It's just the opposite of austerity.
It is the opposite of austerity. It's like, I'm going to grow my hair long and I don't have to have military cut anymore. Uh-huh. I'm going to have a big style. I'm going to have a coat with a lot of fabric in it and purple collars and stuff like that.
I'm going to use fabric I don't even need.
No, that's
I'm going to use impractical fabric.
The Teddy Girls were called Judies. And they,
Judy.
They wore draped jackets, pencil skirts, hobble skirts, long braids, rolled up jeans, flat shoes, tailored jackets with velvet collars, cameo brooches, espadrilles.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And later they adopted toreador pants, which I always love.
Ole.
Putting your hair in a ponytail. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So the Rockers were the natural heir of the Teddy Boys. They loved American rock and roll. Although it is said that that is not where the Rockers got their name. You would think they were called the Rockers because of rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But they were called Rockers because of the rocker boxes, which are part of the valve system of a four-stroke bike engine, as opposed to the pitiful, weak, and pathetic two-stroke engines used by scooters ridden by pansies. Just saying.
I'm just going to hold my comments until my turn.
Rocker culture was made possible by a lot of changes in British society.
Yay!
Yes.
National service.
End of national service. A post-war...
I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
Whenabouts did the Rockers commence? When did the rocking start?
The rocking began around 57, 58, 59, 60.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, like I'd say, let's say 60 for the most solidified.
Yes.
And then up through about 66.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Thanks.
No problem. A post-war peak in motorcycle engineering produced a number of classic motorcycles, really well-made, fast, easy to handle, things like Norton, Triumph, Matchless, Royal Enfield, Triton, I've actually heard of, like, Triumph and stuff like that. I read a lot of facts about bikes, but detailed engine fact number things elude me.
Yes.
And if you need to know more about twin cylinders and featherbed frames, I... Urge you to do some more research.
Or call us and tell us.
Call us and tell us. Yes, if you know about these bikes, write in. But they were only into British bikes.
They were only into British bikes. That's right. Yes. That's one of the things that they didn't want Harley Davidsons.
No.
They didn't want Indian motorcycles.
No, they wanted British bikes.
If I drove a motorcycle, I would drive an Indian motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they look really cool.
Yes, but, they're cool. They only wanted British steel.
British steel.
Yes.
Which is like, that's good for you guys.
Yes.
Just like, we want American culture, not your bikes.
Yes. One of the documentaries I watched showed a motorcycle factory building bikes and then putting them into a big motorcycle-sized wooden crate and, like, nailing the lid on.
Neat.
Like, so open the box and they're like, there's your bike.
And then it's like meatloaf coming out of the freezer.
Exactly. And they scorned scooters. Scorned them.
Oh, yeah.
Scorned them. It's called them sewing machines.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's fine.
Why would anybody ride something that?
Just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Don't care. We'll find out later.
Yeah. But the motorcycle industry was not the only one that was booming. Britain was bumping and fairly prosperous at the time.
Europe was being rebuilt.
Europe was being rebuilt.
England was being rebuilt.
All of a sudden, there was empty space everywhere.
And a great need for things that you could do in factories and mills.
So there was like rebuilding factories and mills.
Well, and when once you rebuilt them.
For example.
And then you rebuild them, and then you can make steel for, like, the rest
That's
of the
right.
nation.
Tool and die maker.
Sheffield, a city on the move.
Yes. Boom, boom.
So this meant that the towns and cities had great economies, and anybody could get a job if you wanted it. There was work. And so the people had a lot more disposable income. One wizened old dude who was probably about 42, but looked like a wizened old dude.
Go ahead.
And
there's a lot of wizened old 42-year-olds.
Yeah. And he said, quote, "When I started work, I was 14, loading timber onto barges for 9 shillings 4 pence a week. My daughter makes more than me now." Jesus God. Trying to imagine my 14-year-old out loading timber onto a barge for 9 shillings 4 pence a week. So, yes, this gave them financial freedom to buy things like clothes and bikes. But what helped that was there's also the advent of credit cards.
Yes.
And credit, which would help you buy a bike. Huh. I saw one bike was advertised. It was 29 pounds, which I looked up, and that would be 695 pounds these days, which is still pretty cheap for a Triumph.
It's true.
But what
it's
do
true.
I know?
Yeah.
The rockers like to buy a bike and then strip it and customize it.
Yeah.
They would put big mud guards on the front. They'd put these little bitty weird handlebars on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, first thing you do is you get a broom handle and you knock the muffler out so that it's as loud as possible. I suspect that this happens to this day.
Probably.
Brian, do you approve of that? You're just making a sigh.
Just thinking about that specifically.
Yeah.
Loud-ass like, motorcycles.
Yeah.
Like,
burn down our side street.
It's like, you, dude. I got like one-third of the hearing and one fucking ear left. And you're going to drive down
block.
My street making that fucking... Jesus.
There's a stop
fuck
sign
you, man.
Either end.
I know.
Fuck
go to the
you.
Ring road, okay?
Okay.
Take this out of town.
All right.
Says the mechanicness and racingness that they did influence their fashions.
Yes.
Whereas the Teddy Boys had kind of a dandy-ish look to their, please give me some color.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockers had pure biker fashion. Leather jackets, pants, caps, etc. All ideally manufactured by a firm called Lewis Leathers, which was a British company.
That's awesome.
And that's where they wanted to buy them from. The basic inspiration was along the lines of the Wild One leather jacket worn by noted Native American activist Marlon Brando. But the Brockers didn't like the brass and steel buckles on the American jackets, and they had ones that were coated in plastic or leather, because that way when they lay down on the tank to go fast, they didn't scratch their paint.
Yeah, because they put the handlebars are just
tiny.
Like they look like tricycle
they
handlebars.
They do, and they're kind of pointed down in a little
down, so you're just laying your chest on the tank.
You go right up to the front where that little plastic windscreen is, and you're just laying down on it, and they didn't want to scratch
the sweet paint job.
The sweet, sweet paint job, yes. The jackets were adorned with paintings on the back, studs, which one guy said, we put all the studs on the back because it would reflect if a car came up behind you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But he also said, when I first got my jacket and put all my studs on it, I was really excited, but it was also the summer and they'd get really hot and like burn my back. All this like pattern of little cigarette looking burn on his back.
Another t-shirt.
Yeah. But I did. You're like, well, do you need spikes like you're going to get in a fight? But he said, no, it was to be reflective, which
wow.
I thought was interesting.
That's good thinking. That's before, you know, health and safety.
Exactly. All the clubs had badges, little enamel pins.
Mm-hmm.
Races had badges. Towns had badges. They would race and visit each other and trade, like, swaps.
Yes.
Yes. They were a little metal. They'd say, like, Blackpool Aces and stuff like that. The Esso Gas Man was very popular.
Uh-huh.
And we'll include a picture of the Esso Gas Man because it was a little... It's like a Tony the Tiger, except his head is a drop of gasoline.
Okay.
And that was a super... Everybody loved that.
That's cool.
Uh-huh. One woman that was interviewed in one of the documentaries was this OG rocker woman. Her name was like Dana something.
Uh-huh.
She was gorgeous then and now. And she had a long leather... She showed pictures of herself. And she had a long leather coat that was fucking covered in pins and badges. And she said that it was so heavy, but she didn't care. And she could always find a place. And like her... lapel things were at like pieces of an actual tank.
Nice.
Like
and just, holy shit.
And she said when she retired the coat, it had 318 pins on it.
And weighed 75 pounds. I'm just trying to imagine your little pin through your tough-ass leather jacket.
Heavy leather coat. Hers was a long coat. It was great looking. It was like, but yeah, she looked great. They wore pudding basin helmets, which are just the round ones that don't have anything else. They wore goggles and white silk scarves, big biker boots with a particular kind of heavy sock that sailors and fishermen use. And they were these white socks, and they would fold them over the top of their boots. Had to be perfectly straight and perfectly white. And you always had another pair, because if you got one bit of mud, then you had to take those socks off immediately.
God, that must be tough on your hog.
On your hog, Because, these white fisherman socks.
Just pause and change my socks real fast.
Yeah, it's like, and
trench foot is a real thing.
Real creamed their hair, although they wore helmets, so their quiffs were less than the Teddy Boy ones.
Right,
but they still had like the pompadour look. Flawlessly white socks notwithstanding, these greasy leather looks were considered far too grubby to be allowed into polite company. So besides their biker youths, we all saw Blackboard Jungle.
Yes.
I think I missed that part, but the Teddy Boys loved the movie Blackboard Jungle, and like fucking actual shankings would break out whenever the movie would get into fights in the movie theater. So that's what people thought, that the rockers were like the Teddy Boys. So they were like, you can't come here.
No, and they're like, we're just our bikes.
Yeah, we're just on our bikes. But they got banned from dance halls, clubs, pubs, etc.
Maybe if they were dressed nicer.
No, though they had to find someplace else to hang out. But as luck would have it, the next piece of the rocker puzzle was about to fall into place. In the late 50s, early 60s, a lot of British cities built ring roads, highways that go all the way around the outside of the city.
It's all about building highways.
There we go. These highways had no speed limit and went in a circle, which is very helpful when you want to fucking race.
Burn
it up.
It's true.
So people started opening service stations and cafes. They call them cafes. We would call them greasy spoon diners. So when they talk about the cafe, it's not bonjour,
I know,
ça va, have a croissant. No, it's like, imagine a truck stop diner. They call it a cafe.
I suspected it was perhaps not a bistro.
you would be correct.
The other thing about rocker culture is they loved bistros.
They did. Like,
so into fresh pastry.
Jerry makes a fine croissant.
It's a fucking gatto.
That's a fucking gatto. That's right. So they called them cafes. And these became the gathering places for the motorcycle clubs. They go there, sit in there, drink tea and coffee and eat. And the favorite game was to put a record on the jukebox and race to a point and back before the song was over.
Oh, that's nice. And it's like a 45, too.
Right, yeah.
And it's like a gas station. Is it a mechanic, too?
There's like a mechanic. There's like a garage near. And then it's a cafe. And it's a truck stop. It's a service station.
Yes. Yeah.
The most famous of these hangouts was and still is a truck stop on the North Circular called the Ace Cafe. I have seen it from a car.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I have seen it many times, and I have always wanted to go there, but I never have because it's a truck stop, and so it's like not close to a tube station.
Right.
I'm sure I could bus and walk there. I just haven't ever managed to do
You're
it.
You're like, I'm coming up in the most ludicrous way possible.
Right. I'll just like hoof up to it. I want to go. Maybe I will make it sometime. I want a t-shirt, and I want to get one, like, actually at the place. But the Ace Cafe was...
We should rent motorcycles.
Shoot. We should rent Vespas. We should just go and get our asses
just
kicked.
Chased right away.
It's just like a push scooter.
It's just a scooter. I got my scooter! And it's like a razor scooter. One of those little tiny, like, little pocket rocket motorcycles that are teensy.
Those teeny tiny ones. Sup, fuckers?
They're like, they're too stunned to respond. Well, the Ace Cafe was opened in 1938. It was a 24-hour transport cafe with fuel pumps and a car wash. Car shampoo, 5 shillings.
Car shampoo.
And it was right on the North Circular, which had no speed limit, and went a great deal away around London. And so with this and the opportunity to make a few extra bob guiding long-distance truckers to local destinations.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like you hang out and somebody's like, how do I get to here? And they're like, follow me. And
Because there's not like there's a map.
Right, there's not the A to Z at this point.
Dickington on print or something.
So the Ace Cafe, like I said, it's still there. For a while, it was closed. It was never closed, but for a while, it just became a tire store and garage. Uh-huh. But it was purchased again and is now a cafe.
Rockers. And
yes, by some old rockers who were like, let's give us back our place. And it is the Ace Cafe once again, and it still is itself. And you can go. They have reunions, and they have the Brighton Burn, which is a race to Brighton and back.
That'd be awesome.
I know. But so even though they had found this great hangout, people still didn't like their rowdiness, and they boys found themselves excluded from a lot of places, which led to the formation of a culture within a culture, the 59 Club.
Oh.
If you didn't ride a bike and you didn't adhere to the leather jacket, DA haircut, battered jeans, you didn't dare go to the Ace Cafe.
No.
Many citizens were terrified even to pass the place. But... they were outcasts, despised and feared in equal measure, said this article that I read.
Oh, wow.
But like everyone else, and a man named Father Shergold Shergold.
Oh, God. Is this like a fucking Boys Town sort of situation?
Yes, Father Shergold Shergold.
Boutros Worthington.
He was a keen bike enthusiast and believed that these boys could be saved from a life of crime if only they had some sense of purpose and somewhere to belong. And I'm like, they've got a motorcycle club and a cafe.
They are. They've made their own.
They've made their own. But yeah, please get your Jesus up in there. Okay.
Is this going to be about Jesus?
God damn it.
I know. Father Shergold said, no, because of their dress, their noisy bikes, and their tendency to move in gangs, nobody wanted them. Shergold wanted to go to the Ace Cafe and give out religious posters for the benefit of the bikers, but he feared the reception he would get.
Good job, sir.
Finally, he decided to do it. He hid his clerical collar under a white scarf, rode in on his Triumph Speed Twin, which reminds me of the joke about, like, where are motorcycles mentioned in the Bible?
Where?
Okay, it's like, I don't know the actual quote, but it says, Joseph's triumph was heard throughout the land. So every time... I read about a Triumph motorcycle. I thought about that. But yes, so Father Shergold's recollection of the trip shows the terror the biker boys instilled. Quote, just past Staples Corner, about a dozen bikes ridden by sinister figures in black leathers rode past in the opposite direction. I felt sick with fear.
Oh, God.
By the time I reached the bridges at Stonebridge Park, I was in such a panic, I opened the throttle and fled past the Ace as fast as I could. I realized I was being a coward, so I turned back.
Yeah, you were.
Again, panic seized me, and I went past again. And then I turned back finally and rode into the forecourt. By now, the Ace was practically deserted, but I consoled myself that I'd at least penetrated the lion's den, even if the lions weren't there.
Fucking Christians, man.
He returned a few weeks later, armed with leaflets, making no attempt to hide his collar. It was packed, hundreds of boys milling around, laughing and talking. I thought, this is it. I shall almost certainly lose my trousers and end up in the canal.
Oh, no.
But no, he was treated with every courtesy and was amazed at the positive reaction he got when he invited the bikers to attend a special biker's service at his church the following evening.
Oh.
He had bikes on display in the church, and some bikers wheeled their machines right into the sanctuary.
Right into the name.
Exactly.
On the blessing of the bikes.
That's right.
The stained glass, you guys.
No, and this was in an old club called the 59 Club originally, like the building, which had been founded by Reverend John Oates and opened in 1959 by Princess Margaret and Cliff Richard. Jesus. I declare this club open.
The tiny curtain was pulled back.
Yeah, the tiny curtain was pulled back. They started going. He started this little church group. People started going. It got some press. You can still join the 59 Club. It became the biggest biking club in the world with more than 11,000 members.
Neat.
And the club's roundel badge with 59 became the envy of bikers everywhere.
Ooh.
It was a hard one to get. So, yes, you can still.
Because you had to go to church.
Because you had to go to church to get it, right.
Not worth it.
Not worth it. Interestingly enough, the rockers did not like drugs.
Huh.
They did not take drugs because mods and beatniks took drugs.
That's
and
right.
It is unmanly. It's cheating.
We'll get to that.
A kind of street Bushido spirit. If you have to resort to drugs to give you nerves and confidence, then you can't be much of a man.
That's also true.
According to Johnny Stewart in his book, Rockers, Kings of the Road, quote, but they had no knowledge of different sites of drugs. To them, amphetamines, heroin, cannabis was all drugs
it
and
was
to
all
be hated.
Well, I guess if, like, your whole thing is to drive fast on your motorcycle, you realize that
you don't
like,
want heroin.
You don't want drugs.
Right. Yeah.
It's like that's kind of the rush that you're
getting.
Yeah,
they're getting their rush
and
there.
Also, you know, if you do drugs, I mean, you can die without drugs.
Exactly. So, their ritual hatred of mods and other subcultures was based on the fact that these people were believed to take drugs and were sissies. So there. Ha, ha. And let's hear more about this ritual hatred.
Please, yes.
There have been other subcultures they disliked. Many were less subcultures and more like other races and nationalities.
Yeah.
But there is one group that the Rockers did not like, and that is the mods. We will learn more about the mods,
yes,
soon.
Yes, we will.
But right now...
The superiority of the mods.
But right now, we're going to turn to the summer of 1964, where these groups anticipated the head-to-head nature of this podcast by actually fighting one another.
That's right.
We'll see. Kinda.
Uh-huh.
We'll see. In Britain, as you know, they have what are called bank holiday weekends throughout the year. Long weekends where it's a holiday, but they don't give it a name like Labor Day weekend.
It's just a three-day weekend.
It's just called bank holiday weekend. Easter bank holiday. Mm-hmm. Whitsun bank holiday. These are long weekends where most people get an extra day or two off. So it was the tradition to go to the seaside and hang out on the beach and eat
cold
fish.
Water, rocks.
Hard beaches and cold water. Hard, cold, painful. I've been to Brighton. Ow.
All of it.
Just like hobble painfully down the beach and put your foot in the icy water. And it's like the height of July and you're still like, this is cold.
Yeah, we were in Ireland in June and like we were freezing on the beach and next to us was this like nearly translucent youth and just like some Speedo briefs like frolicking in the surf. And I was like, I need another jacket.
I need this jacket, please. I'm so cold.
The rocks.
It's summer.
That's right.
Yeah.
The sun wasn't even out.
No, it was cloudy.
Just yeah, what? We do these, what we can.
These kids and their grandma were just, you know, just like.
So, yes, and it was the tradition to take your family to the seaside, ride rides, play games, sea shows on the pier. But in the summer of 64, these family holidays were spoiled, ruined by hooligans and violence.
Both sides now.
Both sides now. The first incident took place at the Easter weekend in Clacton-on-Sea.
Yes.
It was the tail end of the coldest winter since 1883.
And the people were like
right
pissed.
Right near the beach.
Because like, I'm here for my Easter bank holiday and it's like 25 degrees.
Freezing
outside.
Cold and raining.
Not Celsius 25.
No. Right, no. Like 25 degrees Fahrenheit. Freezing cold and raining. But they didn't,
fuck it, we're at the beach!
They didn't go home or find an alternate activity. They just went to the beach and stiff upper lip that mofo.
Like, because we fought what? Hitler for our
if
right
we
to come
don't
to the beach.
Go to the beach, what are we going to do?
We've always gone to Clacton-on-Sea at Easter weekend. We are unable to come up with any other plan.
What if we don't go?
No! So at this point, there wasn't really any sort of Rockers or mods rally. It was just people who were there on mm-hmm. their holiday because these are both working class subcultures.
Yes, they are.
They're both working class subcultures. And so that
they had grown up going to Clacton-on-the-Sea.
They'd grown up
children.
Going to Clacton-on-Sea at Easter weekend. And so now they were here wearing their leathers, but they weren't here like Sturgis. They mm-hmm. were just like, it's Easter weekend. Let's go to Clacton. But it was so fucking cold that everybody was hanging out inside and they were in the arcades and uh-huh. stuff. At that point, a bunch of rowdy mods yeah. jumped the turnstile, rude. AKA pushed past the one old man sitting there collecting everyone's shilling, and ran into the arcades.
In the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes, because he was a Crimean War vet. That was his job.
He was in the Battle of Spy on God. Right.
He had one limb left, and he used it to shake the cup you put your shilling in. And
just
they mod pushed
leg.
Past him and ran into the arcades where there were scuffles breaking out. A few things got broken. The cops got called to quell this riot,
yes.
which it was not really a riot. It was some scuffling kids. Some things got broken. The local folks were upset, but it was all over fairly quickly
yes.
and safely. And then the tabloids got involved.
Right.
As per usual, if there's shit going down in Britain, it'll be the colonialist monarchy or the tabloid press.
That's right. Who likes to stir shit more?
So they took this story and they turned it into mods versus rockers brawling on the beach. So that they could begin to churn out column inches about these teenage hooligans and their deadly rivalry.
That's right.
The older people lost their minds. Yes, lost their minds. When they were that age, they were all being tear gassed in Belgium.
Or they were loading logs onto a barge.
Digging grandma out of the wreck of the Balham tube station. And there are youth mobs committing violence.
Mm-hmm.
Churchill said you were going to fight them on the beaches, but they meant the Jerrys, not this kind
not
of mayhem.
This kind of shit.
This is not it. All these, yes.
In it. No, in the same documentary that we watched, Mods, Rockers, and
Bank Holiday Mayhem. I watched several, but I did watch that one.
Exactly. Somebody was talking about, she was like, the damage was only like 500 pounds. That's like less than regular bank holiday damage.
Yeah, because it was so cold and there were fewer people there.
She's like, that's like, there's always about that much damage.
Just like drunk people getting into fights. Mods and Rockers didn't invent that. Hey,
no,
Britain, thank you. But the press loved this outrage and continued to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
The Tabs printed everything they could dredge up about any teenager anywhere. If somebody committed a random crime, it was like, was he a mod or a rocker?
Yes.
Clearly this drug-fueled speed demon mayhem.
Mm-hmm.
The news would go and interview mods and rockers on the street and ask them questions like, do you believe that some fights are justifiable and unavoidable? And where and when do you think the next battle will be?
Yes, and then they would print, next battle in Margate!
Exactly.
So they were like, fuck, I guess we gotta go to Margate and fight.
That's it. So once the journos had essentially announced that the next rumble between these bitter adversaries would be on Whitsun Bank Holiday in Brighton, guess what? Thousands of youths descended on Brighton and Whitsun.
Exactly.
Which is an early June, itching for a fight. The Rockers were totally not doing anything, okay? They were, there's a film that shows them clearly standing on a beach.
Just hanging around.
Milling around and smoking and shit. When a large group of mods swarms the beach and surrounds them.
Yes.
The Rockers flee, climb up a stairway, and try to hold their own.
Pussies.
And the mods
They're
start,
on scooters.
They are on scooters. Well, not on that rock beach. Nobody
no,
can.
Nobody is.
You can barely walk on that thing. It's like, ow, ow.
My creepers. Stop.
Creepers. Like, my beautiful Italian flat.
Exactly.
The mods started throwing rocks at them from Brighton Beach, which is 100% made of golf ball-sized rocks.
Plenty to go around.
And they hurt like a mofo just to hobble down towards the freezing cold sea.
Like, stepping on them hurts.
Yes. Yeah, so
in
imagine
your shoes.
Getting one chucked at my bonce would hurt like fuck. Eventually, the police broke it up and arrested a bunch of lads, and Brighton settled down. Two more towns suffered invasions of hooligan violence, Margate and Hastings.
Margate.
Which prompted many Second Battle of Hastings headlines.
Second Battle of Hastings, yes.
The violence and looting was not zero, but to be fair, it was never the bloodbath that the news of the world was hoping for. And by the end of the summer, interestingly enough, the Rockers, despite their leather menace, had been forced into kind of the good guys.
Oh, really?
Because their stance was, we're just trying to have a beach weekend in
we
this
are trying to hang
traditional
out.
Way, traditional place, traditional time. And these snobby people with their foreign stuff are coming to threaten our British good time.
Oh, here we go. I
yes, yes.
I know I saw I mentioned Margate because I saw the headline was Wild Ones Beat Up Margate.
Wild Ones Beat Up Margate. Though ultimately we must remember that these are both working class groups no matter what they're writing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, Saturday night's all right for fighting.
That's right.
Get a little action in.
Get a little action in.
Out in Brighton.
Brighton, Margate, Second Battle of Hastings, whatever it takes. And there's a Rocker movie. The mod movie might be cooler, but the Rocker movie is really fucking cool, let me tell you. I didn't even know that one existed, and then I found out that it's called The Leather Boys.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Mr. Halford, would you care to weigh in?
Yeah, I was like, Rob, if there was ever
a
moment
book about
to
it.
Write in, tell me if you've seen this film.
It you made is, a band about it.
Scenes from this movie are used in the background of a Smiths video, and I can't remember which one right now. So, this Leather Boys, you can watch in its entirety on YouTube, and it does not disappoint. So hang on just a second. Here we go. Made in 1964, the film stars 60s movie legend Rita Tushingham in her third screen appearance.
Yes.
Rita Tushingham, Georgie Girl, she did a lot. Smashing Time, that's my favorite one. If you can find Smashing Time starring Rita Tushingham and Lynn Redgrave, she's the less classy one.
Yes.
Lynn Redgrave.
She was the chubby one.
She was the chubby. Vanessa's the one, and yes. Lynn and Rita made several movies, including one called Smashing Time, which at one point in that movie, Lynn becomes a pop star and has a great song called I'm Young.
Uh-huh. I love fake songs.
Oh, yeah. I can't sing, but I'm young. Can't do a thing, but I'm young. I'm a fool, but I'm cool. And they're all like, not like,
madly
Twiggy.
Frugging.
Yeah, they're all like Twiggy looking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Rita Tushingham. She has a flawless Grandma Adkins beehive.
Nice.
And her name is Dot. She's a rocker gal.
Right.
She's 16, so it's high time she gets married.
Absolutely.
She looks 30.
She does look 30, but she's 16.
Like, may have actually been 16, despite looking 30.
But rationing was a hell of a drag, okay?
Yeah, shit.
That's right.
Well, you start smoking at 8, so you feel fuller.
Keeps you from getting hungry.
It keeps you from getting hungry.
Yes.
And even when you're not smoking, there's a steel mill next door. It washes right over you, right, Rob?
It smokes for you.
It smokes for you. So her rocker boyfriend, Reg, doesn't disappoint. He brings the ring to her at school, and then they run home to his grand's house, where he lives, so that they can shag before anyone gets home from work. This film actually has a lot of... It doesn't have sex in it, but it has a lot of scenes where it's like, now we're alone. Uh-huh. Like a lot of pre-sex, I guess.
Yeah. Raciness.
Strongly implied sex.
Yes. Along with a lot of times that it's Dot asking and wanting it and enjoying it.
What?
So... We are already years, like Frankie and Annette movies is what's happening in the U.S.
Yes.
in 1964. And this movie was way different in a lot of ways.
Yes.
So his parents are wartime relics who talk about how kids these days don't understand you should buy a house and not a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom is a tart who spends her evenings at the bingo hall.
Nice.
Reg and Dot have a church wedding. All their biker mates rally round and follow their bus to the reception hall. It was a proper old Routemaster bus. Number 49, which I looked up, and it runs from Clapham in South London, which is actually where
they would be.
Yes. The reception is great. The whole movie was great because I love old movies like this where you just like look at the city in the background.
Right. Uh-huh. This is like extremely contemporary.
It's 100% contemporary. The whole reception... is in a little hall, and there's mm-hmm. a cake. At one point, an uncle is circling through the crowd, taking everyone's drink orders. The bride wants a whiskey. Someone wants a port and lemon.
I've seen port, and I've like seen like movies and stuff mm-hmm. where I've ordered a port and lemon, and I was like,
I've had port, and it's like the sweetest. It's like sweeter than Manischewitz. It's the sweetest,
and
most disgusting.
You know what can help with that?
Thick. What, lemon?
Lemon.
I don't want it, even with a lemon in it. I'll have
like
a whiskey.
Lemon and lemonade?
I don't know if it's a straight up squeezedy lemon or is it lemonade?
Shoot, I don't know.
It's rationing. It's probably not a whole lemon.
I'm sure. Like, where are you going to fucking lemon?
Where are you
going
to get a whole fucking enough pub's worth of lemons?
You're not bananas.
The groom wants beer, to which Uncle replies, "Watch yourself. Beer makes you queer." The two go on honeymoon to Butlins at Bognor Regis.
Yes!
Which was filmed possibly surreptitiously at the actual Butlins at Bognor Regis.
What? Were they going to recreate a Butlins?
No, they were there. And it was like people there. And everybody looks like, I don't know, Terry Jones in drag. Yes. Monty Python. Yes.
Fucking Skagness!
Yes! It was so crowded.
Yes.
The happy couple discuss the entertainment options from the daily program, and I wonder what it's like to go on a vacation like that, or like to the Catskills, where it's like, well, we're going to go to the He-Man competition, and then it's like shuffleboard, and then...
I one time...
The tea dance.
...watched a documentary about Butlins.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was super awesome, and they talked about how Butlins were... basically old army bases and barracks that had been dressed up.
Yeah,
I could see
because
that.
There was rooms.
There's a big kitchen and dining hall.
There's a big kitchen and dining hall. And they ran everything on the same schedule.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everybody comes in. Here's your meal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, breakfast, 8 to 8:30.
Yeah, 8 to 9 is breakfast, right.
Uh-huh. And how they just like sort of took over this existing space.
That's interesting. And I can see that now. And it was nicer looking like than that, but it was still like that.
Uh-huh.
And she says something about, oh, I got us a chalet. And it's like a motel room. It's like, that's not a chalet.
Yeah.
It's on the second floor.
Yes.
Bored by day 2, Dot has her hair bleached at the on-site salon and immediately becomes a drunken harridan.
Obviously.
Dancing with other men, telling dirty jokes.
Well, this is why she wanted sex.
Mm-hmm. Trouble in paradise. They go back to Clapham. Dot's spending all of their money on hair, her hair, and booze. She only cooks like cans of baked beans in their tiny bed sit, shrieking about how she didn't get married to work. She got married to get taken care of. Reg,
keep in mind who you married, ma'am.
Reg flees to the Ace Cafe, which was the actual Ace Cafe.
Wow.
And many scenes were filmed. Like the opening scene is everybody pulling into the Ace Cafe.
Bring your bikes. We're making a movie.
That's right. He gets talking and then racing with a blonde fellow named Pete, who I thought for a moment was played by Gorgeous George the Wrestler.
God, I wish.
But was actually played by the guy who played Tinker on the Lovejoy series, which also starred Ian McShane and the lady who played Mrs. Hughes on Downton Abbey. The two of them end up riding around, and they sitting by a bonfire above a railroad trestle, as you do, and shooting rockets while Pete tells Reg about how his parents were both killed in an air raid. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. After more rocket shooting, Reg goes home. Dot wants to get busy, but Reg isn't interested.
Because he's been with Pete.
He's been with Pete. And well, and the bed is full of food and crumbs, and she still has her chewing gum in her mouth.
Gross.
Yes. So he flees once again to the Ace, runs into Pete, who's hanging out with a blonde named Liz, the blonde man. They get drunk. They go back to Reg's grand's place, where Pete literally rents the other half of Reg's bed in the spare room.
Okay,
the two of them hop into the bed and banter extensively. The IMDb trivia says that much of this movie was improvised, and I believe it.
Oh.
Although Pete should get like a little Oscar for his like spiely banter. It's really good. Pete and Reg do a lot of riding. They decide to join a race that goes to Edinburgh and back.
That's long.
Oh. Dot goes to her skanky mom and complains about her husband. Mom's advice is to fake a pregnancy to hook him back, then fake a miscarriage to lock him down.
Yep.
He's at work during the day. He won't know. Just tell him you lost it. Because a miscarriage is something that happens, I guess, within an hour.
Yeah.
Well, hey, and then you're fine.
It can be quick. He's not going to ask any questions.
That's true.
Hey, it turns out I was pregnant this morning, but then about 20 minutes later, I lost it.
And then I went to the shops. No,
bad news.
So Dot corners him at the Ace Cafe and tries it, but he's like, it's not my kid.
That's the other thing.
Oh, shit.
So he goes out to stand in the car park with Pete, where they have some heart-to-hearts, where he says things like, I just wanted to be a normal married guy, but it didn't work. I can't talk to her. Not like you and me, Pete.
Oh.
Dot comes out, tells them they look like a couple of queers, and Reg gets shook.
Yes. And Reg is like, nah.
Pete tells him to shake
the beer. It was the beer.
Pete tells him to shake it off and suggests that they book passage to New York City, where the bars are open till 4 and there's 13 channels on the television. And let's pause to wonder what's playing on channel 13 of the New York television in 1964.
At four in the morning.
Doesn't matter. You know who else is in New York? Bunch of gays.
Bunch of homos. After some self-doubts and a homoerotic pillow fight, like there's any other kind.
Exactly. Were they shirtless?
No, they were not. They were wearing their, like, singlet vests. It's time for the Edinburgh burn. Up and back.
Edinburgh.
And you got to mail a postcard from Edinburgh Castle to prove that you were there.
Oh, that's nice.
There is a great deal of racing and road footage in this movie. Like, a lot of just, like, I'm on another motorcycle watching you guys ride. And I loved it because I love to look at what London and England looked like back then. Several of the IMDb reviews talked about the groundbreaking gay storyline, but one of them was like, why does nobody talk about the motorcycle? And then goes on.
I am here for the bikes.
If you're here for the bikes, you will not be disappointed.
Well, I'm glad that the movie makers were obviously like, we're here for the bikes.
We're here for the bikes. Yes, this was made by and with and for actual rockers. Mm-hmm. And so there's lots of bike footage. I also, maybe I'm dumb, realized while watching the bike race that the silk scarves go around your mouth to keep the bugs out.
Oh.
I thought, silk scarf.
It's to fly jauntily.
Right. No, but they had them wrapped around their mouths. And I was like, that's so they can breathe and not get a mouthful of bugs.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
God, I still can't get over that. Like, I watch Brokeback Mountain. There's no mountaineering at all in this movie.
What about the sheep herding?
Yes. No, this is like, what about the bikes? In the bit of the race that was actually filmed in Edinburgh, I thought something was wrong with the film, but it was just that foggy.
And they're like, look, guys, it's not going to get any better.
No. Along the race course, they bump into Dot, who has gone back to being a brunette and stopped acting like Peggy Mitchell.
Aw.
She's riding with another biker lad. She admits to Reg that there is no baby. The other
and
dude,
he's like, I know.
Yeah, he was like,
mm. Dude, I know, okay.
The other dude breaks his piston. So Dot accepts Reg's offer for a lift back to London, much to Pete's distress.
Oh.
At a rest break, Dot and Reg slow dance in a cafe, even though it means he will lose the race. Back at the Ace, Pete steals Reg away for victory drinks. I think Pete won, but it was kind of vague, even though if they had a lot of build up to it. And eventually, Pete and Reg are back in that double bed.
Yeah.
Pete still wants Reg to run off to New York, but Reg is thinking of Dot once again. And I'm thinking of how shocked I was that Pete didn't die in a motorcycle crash, because that's what I was waiting
that's
for.
That's right.
Like a good 1964 movie fag.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Reg goes back to Dot, and Pete is heartbroken. What about me, he asks, and Reg replies, what do you mean? Haven't we been happy together? It was very progressive and very touching, and I thought the movie was over, but psych. Reg goes back to the bedsit, and Dot's there with Piston Dude.
Oh,
they get in a
really?
Big fight. Reg leaves and goes to find Pete.
God.
All right.
Says he wants to go with him to New York. Overjoy said, Pete says, okay, wait here in this pub, and I'll go get the tick. I'll go get my money.
Oh, no, that's bad.
Once in the pub, Reg is sexually harassed by like three Polari queens who turn out to be Pete's friends, and they tell him that the boat isn't going to New York, it's only going to Cardiff, and that it's basically like these guys' shaggin' wagon. There's a whiff of sexual trafficking. It's kind of vague.
No.
While still being really explicit for the times, Reg cannot deal with this faggotry. Pete is silent but understanding. Reg takes his suitcase through the fog to a bus stop and... scene.
Wow.
I had never heard of this movie, but it is in the same camp as Victim and Sunday Bloody Sunday in the way that British gay cinema history is different from American gay cinema history.
Very much so.
But that would be a different podcast, I guess.
Indeed.
And the Rockers continue to rock to this day. There are Ace Cafe reunions, burns, Brighton burns, races, holiday weekends. The guys are still out there with their motorcycles. The Ace Cafe is open, and we can go if we want to, if you're not a mod. Pussy.
We didn't run away on the beach is what I'm saying.
Well, we had to because there were like 1,000 of you guys.
Because our limp wrists were throwing
limp
rocks.
Throwing heavy rocks. One thing I forgot to write down is one of the old rockers, they were talking about, he's like, oh yeah, we had a guy in our crew and he showed up one day with like a haircut and a scooter and we're like, what the fuck? And he's like, you get more girls if you're a mod. And one guy goes, yeah, because he said, yeah, my wife used to be a mod, but then she liked all the rockers better.
Yeah, so there you go.
And they talked to one mod woman and she's like, oh, some of them were beautiful. They look like Tony Curtis. But so that is one side of the story. The Rockers.
The Rockers.
So let's see.
Alrighty. Tell me your sources.
My sources are the documentary that we both watched about mods, rockers, and holiday bank holiday madness.
Mayhem.
Mayhem. I watched several other like mods and the rockers, one which was hosted by Suggs from Madness.
I saw that one.
That was good. Mm-hmm. I read the article about the 59 Club was on a website called Visor Down.
Nice.
And I read about their motorcycles on a, and I'm sorry, I thought I wrote it down, but it was a motorcycle website. Okay. It was like Cycle World or something like that. And I read Wikipedia and I read pieces of the, a guy wrote a book about the rockers and I didn't read all of it, obviously, but I read some chunks of it. And I can't remember. It's called Folk Villains.
Okay.
The Rockers, Folk Villains, something like that.
Cool.
Huh. Yeah. Very cool. There was a lot of... And I watched The Leather Boys.
The Leather Boys.
Which was great. All right. Do we have a hat? I have a helmet.
Yes. That counts.
Uh-huh. And we have symbols. I have badges.
Okay, wait. Just a second.
I put hat, symbols, and handshakes all in one
hat, question. Symbols, and handshakes. Yeah, okay. That's
it's all one. Yes. Yeah. So, yes, we do. We've got all badges, pins, helmets. One
buckles.
One guy
scarves.
One group talked about how they made their aces on their back.
Using I saw that they
the saucers from the cafe and they drew around
and they
it to make a club.
Drew a big club on the back and they said it was super fucking cool. But then whenever like shit went down, the cops were like, "Hey, guess whose gang you're in?
Hey, are you the ones with the big white clubs on the back of your?"
No. I'm wearing it for a friend.
So yes, they definitely had all kinds of signifiers.
Mm-hmm.
Outfits are. Key to these groups.
Yes.
Key to these groups.
About as key as they're ever going to be.
Yeah, so
yes,
like
podcast.
They get a big score for
say.
This because look is a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that with your hat, symbol, and handshake is your bike.
Yes.
So, because there was a lot of talk, and again, that's not my kind of talk, but there's lots of talk about, like, the Triumph versus the Norton versus the, and this kind of engine and this kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, and, like, working on your bike and customizing your bike.
And the cool gal, she talked about how her first bike was a, she was like, a, it was like a P40, not a P40, but it was like a P45. It was terrible. But then I got my powder blue Triumph twin something. And
fucking
she,
boss. And yeah, I saw her too, and she was a picture to her. I was like, please be my mom and my queen.
And my queen. It's like, I love you. You're fantastic. Do we have an agenda?
Have a dream moment.
Go fucking fast.
Agenda is going fast.
There's no other, there's nothing else to it, really. Go fast. When were non-whites allowed? Next question.
There's a goose egg.
How much is this going to cost? Well, kind of nothing because you put it on credit.
It's true. So, but it's not going to cost nothing.
No.
But it is affordable.
It is affordable.
You have a job.
I have a job. I have several jobs. I have a job. My wife has a little part-time job if she wants it. We have an income. You know, I have a factory job. I can be a part of a union for a few more years till Thatcher comes around.
Right, so.
So it will cost you, but it will be affordable. Is this a drinking club? Yes.
Yes.
But it's not a drinking club. It's not like the Hellfire Club.
No. They but it's also but it's also not like.
Yeah, it's not.
We're working for a purpose.
Right, it's not like the American Indian movement where, like, we have shit to do. No. So it is kind of a drinking club, but it's not. It's not just.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not for rich men.
It's a biking club.
It's a biking club, and it's not for rich men. It's for working class guys. Are you going to be hazed?
Probably in some way.
Probably in some way. You're not going to be jumped
in. You've got to earn your name.
Right. People are going to rag on your bike until. Oh, I wrote it down somewhere, the kind of bike that Reg has. Because the man in the IMDb interview pointed out what kind. It's like a Triumph 650 something. You'd be hazed? Probably a little bit.
Yeah.
You'll be going to be razzed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody famous in this? I read about lots of famous teddy boys, but I didn't read, like, Michael Gambon was a teddy boy. I read that in one of them. So I don't know about famous rockers.
Okay.
Yeah. Is this going to be about Jesus? No, this is not.
Well, but kind of. Maybe the 59 Club.
Oh, okay. You know, but that was just the subset of the subset. So it gets a little bit, but it doesn't get a whole lot.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so, okay. Is it math time?
Math time.
Oh, that's 20. Oh, that's 27. Ooh, I know that. 27, 20, 29, 30, 16,
31,
32, 33, 34,
35, 36, that's 37, 38, 39, 40, 47,
29, 30.
I got 41.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 40.
I got 40.
81. That's how fast your one guy said if your machine told you were going 100, you were probably really only going 85. He goes, but I've really done a ton, said one of the guys.
Yes.
I've really done
a ton. Yeah, because they talked about the ton-up club.
The ton-up club. That means you go 100 miles an hour.
Uh-huh.
So, very cool.
Very cool. At halftime, we are meeting on the beach.
And we're going to fucking fight.
And we're going to fucking fight.
Throw some rocks.
We have a selection of British seaside themed flavors. We have salt and vinegar seltzer.
Jellied eels.
And pie and mash. It's up to you. Squeaky's got some pills. That's all you, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're meeting Squeaky places and taking pills that she gives you, Madness assumes no responsibility.
Absolutely not.
Madness has warned you a bunch of times.
A bunch of times.
About this.
At this point, really, we can't warn you anymore.
Don't take anything she offers you.
No, a sealed chocolate, an orange. Don't take it. She's figured out some way to take it.
Don't take a kitten.
No.
God. Take the kitten.
Get the kitten away from Squeaky.
Look around for any other animals that she may have commandeered.
That's right. Gather them all up and bring them to the bus. It'll be okay.
Seriously, yes. The driver will let you on for free because he's not a monster.
That's right. You can't even take a sealed canned good from her.
No.
No.
Because it's bulging already.
You can buy a seltzer.
You can buy a seltzer, though, and you should.
Yeah.
You should. That's about it.
All right.
See you after the half.
Yay! We've taken a break in the fighting. Amanda's bleeding.
I'm bleeding, like from my, ow.
I need to comb my hair.
I'm going to say something, but yeah, you might have one need to have that looked at.
It's
like a minor emergency center on it. Or something.
Exactly.
Fortunately, it's England, so we can just go someplace.
Can I have a brandy?
Yes, you can.
I'll be okay.
Here we go.
But you won't get charged.
I won't get charged. £4,580
Right,
to put the stitches in my head.
Right.
All right.
I know you can see me. Now here's the surprise. Grooving.
You can see for miles and miles.
I can see you miles.
God, teenage wasteland. Okay, look.
So
the Who is amazing.
The Who is amazing.
All right.
I wish they'd made a musical about stuff that we could use on our... Hey!
Wait a minute.
All right, here we go.
Oh, is this the other side of the story? Now it's time for the rest of the story.
You've heard about the rockers.
Now, hear about the mods.
Picture it. Post-war
the
England.
The rest.
You're still on rationing and everything sucks.
Oh, God, yes.
You, a teen, are too young to really remember the wars.
Yes.
And all you know is a bombed out city full of exhausted people who are glad to put their fucking feet up and have a cuppa.
Have a cuppa.
You're working class. No uni for you.
Nope.
Which is fine because due to Europe being a total wasteland, there are plenty of jobs to be had.
You can get married. 16.
You can. You could earn up to £1 a week, which is about 23 pounds today, which is about 30 something bucks,
yeah.
Keep in mind, things cost...
Was this pre-decimalization, though?
Yes, it is.
Pre-decimalization, so your pound a week, your 23 bucks pounds a week is going on things that are divided up into fractions of cents.
Fractions of cents, right. 9 pounds, 4 shillings, and sixpence.
Mm-hmm, so...
Yes. I remember one girl and one of the things I said, the newsman was asking them, like, how much do you spend? What's your pocket money?
Yeah,
and they'd say like, about a pound a week.
About a pound a week, yeah.
You spend it on clothes and stuff.
Uh-huh. And what do you want to spend it on? Having fun. Even though Britain was still standing, all the fun had been wrung out of society.
You're eating jam out of a can with a spoon.
And you're glad to have it. In the late 1950s, groups of working-class teenagers, those born during the war, started getting together to listen to jazz.
Ooh.
Specifically, modern jazz, like Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, as well as Billie Holiday, Etta James. These black artists were hip, cool, and ironic.
Yes.
And what better way to set yourself apart from British society at this time?
Exactly.
Looking to
drug-fueled Negro race music.
There we go. Looking to America was only one way to get off the island, if only in your drug-addled mind. The other was to embrace Jamaican rude boy culture, because the mods felt that black culture, quote, ruled the night hours.
Ooh.
Rude boy culture arose from the poorer sections of Kingston, Jamaica, and was associated with violent, discontented youths.
Well, you know.
Exactly. Rude boys.
I wonder what would make the native people of Jamaica so upset.
I don't know.
I don't either. Carry on.
Rude boys favored sharp suits, thin ties, and pork pie or trilby hats, and showed an influence of fashions of U.S. jazz musicians and soul music.
You can still see those outfits on ska people to this day.
Yes, they're still rude boys. This music, U.S. jazz, soul,
race music,
was not played at regular dance clubs, which were full of squares. Nor could you find the same culture.
They put a parking lot on a piece of
land. That's right. Nor could you find the same culture at pubs.
No. That's where your dad is down there. They're just
talking about the war.
They're drinking beer and talking about the war.
Besides, pubs close early.
Fuck that.
Coffee houses have jukeboxes that play jazz. And it didn't matter that they didn't serve booze at the coffee shop because you had all the amphetamines you wanted.
I was gonna say, you're not drinking anyway.
They are legal AF.
That's right. Just get all your pills.
So you go to the coffee house, you get jacked on
Benny's
and coffee, and you dance to jazz albums.
Espresso from the continent.
So they took speed. Later there was heroin, just like their jazz idols. And it was all very beatnik-y.
Yes.
The core of the British mod rebellion was the blatant fetishizing of the American consumer culture.
Mm.
In doing so, mods mocked the class system that had gotten their parents nowhere.
Would continue to get their nowhere.
Continue to get their parents nowhere and created a rebellion based on consuming pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
And these teens went out of their way to avoid the dull, timid, old-fashioned, and uninspired British culture around them.
Yes.
With its repressed and class-obsessed mentality, and they found it all quite naff.
Naff.
Naff. Which...
it's a great word.
It is a great word. I don't know. The actual translation of naff. Like, let's think about
the etymology of naff.
Not the etymology. Like, sort of the American equivalent of naff, mm-hmm. which is dorky and uncool.
Lame. Yeah.
Square, baby.
Square
and lame.
Square and lame. Sad and lame at the same time.
Squalame.
Squalame. Mods rejected Mods rejected the 1950s pop music and sappy love songs because fuck that shit.
Oh, yes.
They aimed at being cool, neat, sharp, hip, and smart by embracing all things sexy and streamlined.
So not British stuff. No square tweed suits.
No. Especially when those things were new, exciting, controversial, and modern.
Modern.
A book called Absolute Beginners,
yes,
by Colin McInnes was published in 1959.
Because we're absolute beginners.
That's right. I read this book.
Hey.
It's really good. In it, an unnamed 18-year-old freelance photographer known only as Blitz Baby, because he was born during the Blitz,
I see how he got that name.
Hey. Yes, that's what his mom calls him. He doesn't have a name. Like, at one point, she... calls him Blitz Baby. Mm. And so that's what we're
doing. Blitz Baby, give me a whirl.
Okay, wait. July to the end of September. Blitz Baby lives in the then decrepit, racially mixed, falling down, crime-ridden area of Notting Hill.
Oh, hey!
Where I looked, and today you can buy a 2-bedroom flat for around £1 million.
Yes. They still have Notting Hill Carnival, mm-hmm. and it's still, culturally, it's a West Indian black part. But yeah, Notting Hill, like the movie with Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Notting Hill's swank now.
He calls it Napoli in the book. So, and he, Blitz Baby, moves around London, encountering Caribbean immigrants, drug addicts, prostitutes, and homosexuals.
Ew, no.
Because Colin McInnes wrote this book when he was 44,
uh-huh.
from the point of view of an 18-year-old teenager, and Colin McInnes was gay and also really into Caribbean immigrants.
Just saying.
So, in the book, the characters have names such as the Fabulous Hoplite, Mr. Cool, the ex-Deb of last year, and the Wizard. And this book that came out in 1959 was the first glimpse of a subculture.
Very cool.
Written by a man who mm-hmm. hung out in these bars and yes. watched.
At this time.
Blitz Baby is not only fixated on jazz, and there's like lots of albums. He talks about like listening to the MJQ, and I was like, what the fuck is that? The Modern Jazz Quartet.
Ah, okay.
But also on clothes.
Yes.
Let us pause for a moment and talk about post-war fashion.
Let's talk about post-war fashion.
When a soldier left the army or was demobilized, they were given a suit of clothing known as the D-Mob suit.
Mm-hmm.
It was an army-issued suit of clothing because they'd been in there for 4 fucking years and had no clothes of their own.
No clothes of their own, right.
None. It's like you're leaving the army. It's like when you get out of prison.
Yeah. It's like, here's the suit and like $15.
Uh-huh.
Like, you don't even have the suit you went in there
with. No, you don't even have the suit you went in with.
They burned it for fuel.
Possibly your house doesn't exist anymore.
Yes. A D-Mob suit consisted of a felt hat or a flat cap,
mm-hmm.
a double-breasted pinstripe 3-piece suit, or you could get a single-breasted jacket with flannel trousers, 2 shirts with matching collar studs, a tie, shoes, and a raincoat. Since these were
no drawers, no socks.
Yeah, no, I'm whatever.
Sure they were, but
since these were army issued, the sizing was all extremely standard, which
yes.
meant nothing
oh, wow.
fit.
Right.
And the
are
thing,
you a 7 or an 8?
And you're like, I'm yeah, kind of and a it, 6 the and thing that I saw was a huge. It was just a warehouse that had just like racks and racks of identical. Suits.
Was it the men's warehouse?
Yeah, exactly. Identical men's like jackets and pants. Mm-hmm. And there was just a sign that said 38.
Yeah.
40.
Okay.
And so.
Go, Brian, go.
Exactly. And so nothing really fit as mm-hmm. well. God. And I said, in the thing I watched, a man referred to the baggy jacket coming down over what was dismally called the seat. the seat of your D-mob suit. And the modernist wanted nothing
to do with
nothing
this
to that.
And neither did the Teddy Boys or the...
No. So yeah, the D-mob suit. And it's just like, you walk out and it's like, everyone is wearing the same... Well-made.
Yes.
Well...
But everybody's
same
the same.
Suit.
And it's not your style. You got this one. It's like whether or not you like to wear this kind of outfit.
But after getting out 4 years...
potato sack.
Yeah. Well, after 4 years in the war, some of them were like fucking pleased to have their own clothes again.
Also true.
In Absolute Beginner, Blitz Baby describes one of his outfits.
Oh.
Gray-pointed alligator casuals... Which were also called winkle pickers because their points were so pointy.
Winkle pickers.
Pink neon ankle crepe nylon stretch, which I can only imagine is those. I saw Robert De Niro wear them in the movie Casino.
Yes.
Where they're like brightly colored yet transparent.
Brightly colored, translucent.
Yes,
look like the sexy panel on a dress.
Yeah,
like, but or like it's a pair of hot pink knee highs. But I need some socks, honey. Can I borrow those?
And you're exactly. Cambridge blue glove fit jeans, a vertical stripe happy shirt. I didn't know what a happy shirt was. revealing a lucky neck charm on its chain. He wore a Roman. Quote, short-arsed jacket, which did not cover your seat, a wrist identity jewel, and a Spartan and a Spartan warrior haircut. I looked up Spartan warrior haircuts, and those are like shaved on the
side.
It's
like the Peaky Blinders fashy look.
It's a Peaky Blinders fashy look. Mm-hmm. The fabulous Hoplite in the book, who is a sympathetic gay character who does not die at the end.
What? Okay, I'm making a note of this.
Uh-huh. He's referred to as a tit, and he doesn't understand... what all this, you know, race fuss is about. But the fabulous Hoplite is seen wearing skin-tight, rubber glove thin, almost transparent cotton slacks, white nylon stretch, and black wafer sole casuals, and a sort of maternity jacket, I can only call it colored blue.
Okay, a maternity jacket.
Yes, so that's what he was wearing. And the mods also stole bowling shoes because they wanted a thin leather shoe.
Uh-huh, and like an Oxford.
Uh-huh, yes. None of this fucking clunky ass work boot shit.
No.
And Italian shoes are expensive.
If you can get them, because Italy's kind of in ruins.
Right. And so they would steal bowling shoes because they wanted that trim look.
Like, bowling shoes are cool looking.
They really are.
They're a lot of fun.
So these kids were well-dressed, listening to jazz, and had money to spend.
Yes, they did, because they all had jobs.
And my question is, how do you get there? Taxis?
No.
They don't have that much money.
And the bus is still kind of day class.
The bus is naff as hell. They don't have that much money, and the money is earmarked for clothes and jazz.
Right.
The tube is mainly caved in still.
I said the tube. Did I mention their nice clothes?
Yes, it's covered in... You'll be covered in smuts if you go in the tube. Uh-huh.
Also, tubes and buses stop running way before the amphetamines wear off.
Yes, that's true. To this day, they still stop running fairly early.
And who's going to ride a fucking bicycle?
Nix.
In Absolute Beginners, Blitz Baby is given a Vespa scooter as payment for taking some intensely private photos of a Latin American diplomat.
Gracious.
Exactly. Thanks to newly available lines of credit.
Hey.
Scooters were easily attainable.
Higher purchase.
That's it. That's what they call it.
And it's not higher. It's higher like rent.
Higher a purchase.
H-I-R-E. Higher purchase. Rent to own.
In Absolute Beginners, Blitz Baby is given a Vespa scooter as payment for some intensely private photos of a Latin American diplomat.
Gracious.
And he comes out and he's like, going to take these pictures because he's a photographer and he takes some of his pornographic pictures.
Right.
But he comes out to this Latin American photographer Latin American diplomat who's wearing like ballet tights and basketball shoes.
Okay.
And
like Chuck Taylor's?
Yeah. Ballet tights, basketball shoes, and like I think some like maybe a singlet and like a feather boa around his neck. I can't really remember.
I am going to go out on a limb and say that this scene is based on actual experience.
Oh, I bet.
Everything in this book.
And the photographer wants him to take pictures of him, and so he's like, okay. And the photographer is going around the room like posing like with his foot up on the couch. rotting on the floor, you know? And so...
You want to mean like this.
Yes, exactly. And he's like, all right, dude.
Man.
He gets... and he gets paid 10 pounds, which I looked up. It was like $250.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, he was also, Blitz Baby, given a scooter, a Vespa
scooter.
And unlike motorcycles, the greasy machinery was not exposed.
That's right.
So you can ride your scooter
in your nice
in
slacks.
Your slacks.
And you don't need a leather, leather 501s and big boots.
They decked out their scooters with a ridiculous amount of rear view mirrors, which has to be disorienting as fuck. I mean, like, imagine like having like 30 rear view mirrors.
Yes, yes.
You're like, eh.
And it's a neat look, but it would be. And you're like, where do I look? Where do I look? The sun is in my eyes.
Exactly. On the back of the scooter was like a 6-foot aerial that had a raccoon tail on it. only one mod said, one old mod said that he had 3 pairs of knickers.
Ah, hell yeah.
And to protect their sweet, sweet clothes, mods wore huge, baggy military parkas while riding.
Yes, giant parkas. Military ones, especially with the Air Force rondelle on
and
the back.
The Air Force rondelle on the back and the big fur hood.
Yes.
In the book, London's Working Class Youth and the Making of Post-Victorian Britain, 1958 to 1971, author Felix, his last name is spelled F-U-H-G, so I guess it's Felix Fug.
Sorry, Felix, but damn.
Felix Fug.
Fug. Dr. Huffar.
This to say.
And Melmay.
Dr.
Fug. I've got to need you to emphasize that every time you say it.
Felix Fug.
Fug.
Had this to say.
Fug.
Scooters. No.
You just talk like that all the time.
Scooters. Scooters, too, became part of the youth cultural identity. They were status symbols, some of them more prestigious than others, and allowed youngsters to make their mark locally, affording them some success with girls.
Mm-hmm.
Pause. Some mods realized that girls didn't want to get on their scooter, and so they drove minis.
Yes. Mm. I'm like, don't mess up my hair, babe.
Exactly.
It's
I'm
raining.
A pencil
plus, it's
skirt.
Raining fucking every day.
I'm wearing a pencil skirt and like leather flats, and it's raining.
Contemporary. This is still Mr. Fug. Contemporary witnesses remember that it was considered fashionable to modify one's own scooter, and accessories were added in an effort to impress onlookers. Tuning and modifying became ubiquitous, reflecting the arrival of the new consumer society and enabling young people to define, display, and display their own individual styles.
So, would you say the mods did a lot of modding?
Oh.
All the mod cons.
All the mod cons.
And if they had online message boards, those message boards would need
modding mods.
I am sorry.
You are not sorry.
Not at all.
I kind of am a little sorry, actually.
But
I mean, I don't feel like it was worth all that.
No.
Fug.
Youngsters printed stickers and installed rare chrome-plated accessories, which could only be obtained if one had the right personal connections.
Uh-huh.
Style and tastes were highly fragmented, which some preferred a purist approach, while others favored heavy modifications. Some mods went so far as to inscribe ACAB, an acronym for all cops are bastards, on the windscreen of their scooters.
Back in the day?
Wow.
Damn.
Others used the provocative slogan, "Good luck, Harry Roberts," in order to gain attention. Harry Roberts had shocked Britain in 1966 with the killing of 3 policemen in Shepherd's Bush.
Damn. Shepherd's Bush. I was there just the other day.
Hey. Naturally, mod elders were fucking furious.
Hey!
They were furious. A good old-fashioned moral panic set in.
Oh, nothing like a good old-fashioned moral
panic. I saw a clip of an ancient 42-year-old Englishman talking about how they should take those scooters away. They should forbid them from riding those scooters. Another woman was complaining that these youths had too much money. They had too much spending money.
I've earned it at my job, bitch.
Yes. And they were just mad. And one thing that helped this along was the end of The National Service. So here it is.
Okay. Boy.
After the war, Britain realized that there was still a fuck ton of work to do rebuilding society, and there was not a lot of guys just rushing in to join the military.
Everybody's like, no, thank you.
No, I don't have to.
I'm good.
I'm
so fine. In 1948, Parliament established the National Service Act. Young men between the ages of 17 and 21 were required to serve in the armed forces for 18 months and remain in the reserves for 4 years. The government started phasing out the act in 1957 when it was decided that men born on or after October 1st, 1939 would not be required to sign up. By November 1960, the last men entered the National Service, and by 1963, the last they were out.
Out, right.
Youths were no longer required to join the fucking army the moment they left school. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure after you'd done your stint, you were officially an adult.
Right.
Yep. And it was time to get married.
That's a lot of the mods talked about. They said, yeah, you got out of school, you joined the National Service. By that time, you got out, you'd made your girlfriend pregnant, you got married.
You're an adult.
Uh-huh.
And so it says it's like England did not truly get their first wave of dedicated teenagers until like 1963.
Yes, 1963.
So
we were shake, rattling, and rolling over here.
Yeah. Just as young men were now allowed to grow up a little and be young before settling down.
I can't sing, but I'm young.
Exactly. Hope I die before I get old.
Yep.
Young women were starting.
It's all falling into place, ladies and gentlemen.
Young women were starting to step out on their own, getting jobs, getting their own apartments, fly new clothes. Blitz Baby, an Absolute Beginners, described the girls as wearing short hemlines, seamless stockings, pointed toe high-heeled stiletto shoes, a crepe nylon rattling petticoat, a short blazer jacket, hair done up in an elfin style, short androgynous hair.
Yeah.
Face pale, almost corpse colored, with a dash of mauve and plenty of mascara.
Nice.
Now, here's how to get that elfin hairstyle.
Okay.
According to a former mod, most of us had terrific hair, and you spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
What you would do is wash your hair, then get a bowl of hot water and put sugar in it, and let the water cool and keep stirring it up, and then plaster the sugar water onto your head and shape your hair.
Oh.
And then we would leave it on all night, and the longer you left it on, the better it was.
You made simple syrup
for
your hair.
Yes, and stuck your hair down.
Use it to comb your hair down.
I bet it.
And it didn't move for a week.
No, it didn't.
Ants.
Yes. These girls did not need or want to attach themselves with a man because they got you pregnant.
Because that guy's just going to get you pregnant.
Real.
And then mod guys.
You've got your own money. You can buy your own soda shops.
Yeah. And mod guys kind of realized and respected that.
Yeah.
And these girls had job, their own money, and a newfound sense of purpose. They weren't waiting at home to get married.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, their colorful yet highly presentable clothing made it easier for them to integrate into square society.
Yes.
They looked good and took care of themselves, unlike rockers.
Rocker chicks.
And later on, punks.
Yes. Yes.
So.
Although punks, to be fair, punks' entire motive was like, I do not wish to look employable.
Correct. Punks had their own agenda.
We could do that one.
But as far as rebellious subcultures go, these kids look good.
They did. They looked very good. They looked expensive.
Mm-hmm.
They looked sharp. Yep. They looked different.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And somebody in one of the documentaries, she said the mods brought color.
Yes, they did.
They brought color.
Because the rockers were the rockers, but they all wore black and white, even the girls with like red lipstick. But the mods were wearing like, I think I'm going to wear a pink dress.
Even the guys are wearing
like colored, like Italian style. Uh-huh. So it's like colored ties and colored shirts.
Tight jackets, narrow lapels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, short, trim trousers.
Trim.
Amanda, I don't know if you ever met my friend Ross, but Jesus Christ. Fancied himself a mod, we'll just say that.
Oh, fancied himself a mod in like 20th century Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Yes, in the mid to late 90s.
In Tulsa.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I would like to see a picture of your friend Ross, if you can wrestle one up.
Rustle one up?
Hey! Oh. Rustle.
I mean, I will say that Ross is a dear friend.
A
person with a good soul.
I'll show you some pictures of me in the 90s if you wish to laugh, Ross, okay?
Look, there's a reason there are so few pictures of me in the 90s, okay?
Right, we all.
Like, at least Ross had a vision and followed through.
That's very true.
Relentlessly.
Yes, that is very true.
You gotta love that.
I like
Ross
this.
Ross would not let anybody get in his way.
Nobody else likes me. Don't give a shit. This is my look. Dude,
seriously, yeah.
Did he get some cool girls?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. No, excellent. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kate. I remember Kate.
Kate was awesome.
Kate was too good for Ross.
Kate, if you're out there and you somehow hear this, you're so awesome.
Great.
We miss you, and we hope you're doing well.
Okay. Back hashtag to my shit. This isn't Rossness madness.
Hey, you knew Ross back then, too.
I did know Ross. I knew Ross at OU. And
do
it
you
wasn't
love it?
Exactly.
I got it at Ross.
It wasn't until I started dating Brian that I found out that Ross knew, not only knew Brian, but knew Brian extremely well.
Yeah.
And what Ross told me after I, like, my first date with Brian was, if you're going to go out with Brian Byrne, you need to learn how to love Tom Petty. I was like, Okay.
That's cool.
And you did.
And I did. That's so, not that I hated Tom Petty.
No. Yeah, but no, like, you need to learn more.
Now, look, I feel confident going up in a Tom Petty trivia contest.
That's right. I'm ready.
It's true.
Okay, so.
Go.
The emphasis
Tom Petty, not a mod.
Definitely not a mod.
Although, they hit really big first in England.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, they got kind of, like, lumped in with punk and new wave, like, I bet based entirely on the jacket Petty was wearing on the cover of their album. But
okay,
whatever, man.
I like this.
It works.
Like this.
Plus, it was a good record.
Whatever works, baby.
The end. The emphasis in the mod cult subculture on consumerism and shopping was the ultimate affront to male working class tradition.
So you don't need a ring, you need a house, said Reg's parents.
Exactly, because in the UK working class tradition, shopping was usually done by women.
Mm-hmm.
Fags wore clothes like that.
Yeah, what are you doing, faggot? You're going and buying, like, nice colored shirts and spending your money on clothes and your hair? What the hell?
Yes.
P.S. Being gay in England at this time was still punishable by prison and possibly death.
It was.
So
it was.
Just a second.
Cranky old people argued that British mods were worshipping leisure and money, scorning the masculine world of hard work and honest labor by spending their time listening to music, collecting records, socializing, and dancing at all nightclubs. Which, let me tell you something, no young people have ever listened to music, socialized, or danced in a fucking club.
It's like, even you, Grandpa, you found time during the war to drink, dance, and socialize.
It's like every single, it's not even like skip a generation. It's
no.
Like every single generation. It's like, these kids are just listening to music and dancing. It's every, like, yes, dick, what did you do?
Every culture around the world since the dawn of humankind, they invented beer and drums, okay?
Okay.
Like, the different
alcohol.
Drum beats made people mad. Huh, it sure is interesting that, you know, there's sort of an outcry against, you know, people who aren't necessarily rich acting like rich people do. In terms
right.
Of buying
having leisure time and
having
fun.
Not wanting
time.
A backbreaking job that kills you by age 48.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Interesting.
A wizened, crumpled 42-year-old.
Exactly. I'm sure it's just a coincidence.
It is. And I have my line here. Don't they know that hanging on in quiet desperation is the English way?
That's right. Stiff upper lip, baby. Stiff upper lip.
This is very different from American teenagers at the time.
Right.
Parents in America had plenty of complaints
yes.
about rock and roll, race yes. music, necking, automobiles. But I do not think that American teens were ever accused of just not suffering enough.
Yes, that's a very different thing.
That it's like, how dare you have a good time?
How dare you not suffer? Yeah, that's not an American thing at
no,
all.
No, not at all. It's just,
I don't want you dancing with Negroes, but I'm glad you're having fun.
Exactly. Well, there was also plenty of, like, square sock hop
yes,
music.
That's right.
Shit, malts and sodas.
Yeah,
whatever.
There's a lot of good,
for
good
white,
time.
For white. White.
Yeah, white kids.
White kids.
Watch the movie Hairspray. It's really good.
It's really good. Yeah, but...
Watch the original movie.
But Hairspray. I mean, like, the documentaries that I watch, it's like, these mod parents, they were just furious. They have just too much money to spend.
It's like, he earned it at his job, and if he wants to buy jackets with it, chill.
Exactly. And it's just like...
He needs to be married and, like, buying a house for his wife.
He's like, I'm 18.
I'm 18. I don't want to get married yet.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, you already covered... The mod versus rockers fights.
Yes, they did.
I will not recover that.
Okay.
But I will say.
The mods, total bastards, surrounded the rockers and threw rocks at them.
Fantastic. One.
The mods were the real rockers.
They were.
Wow.
Wow.
Stoners?
No.
No.
In one of the interviews,
yes.
You talk about, like, what is a justifiable fight?
Yes.
One youth, John Braden, 18, a London mechanic, said, yeah, I'm a mod. I was at Margate, and I'm not ashamed of it. I wasn't the only one. I joined in a few fights. It was a laugh, and I haven't enjoyed myself so much for a long time. It was great. The beach was like a battlefield. It was like we were taking over the country. You want to hit back at all the old geezers who try and tell us what to do. We just want to show them we're not going
to
take it.
That's right. People try to put us down.
Exactly. In addition to listening to jazz mm-hmm. and stuff, there, it was like the first mods.
Yes.
Back when they invented drifting.
That's right. The original mods who invented modding.
We're like really into, you know, black music, yeah. jazz and stuff yeah. like that. But then there were the bands that came up.
Right. Then like at the subculture time. Made its own bands.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and the Who was a huge mm-hmm. one. Mods were also super into the Small Faces.
Yes.
Ichiku Park.
Ichiku Park.
That's cute. Well, it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah,
like the Kinks too.
The Kinks, yes,
the Kinks,
the Small Faces.
The Kinks
they were really
good.
Into.
They are good. I saw their. I saw the Kinks musical in London,
uh-huh.
and a lot of those jukeboxy kind of musicals are not good. But theirs was actually really good because it was
the
written
Kinks rock.
Well, and it was written by one of the Kinks, and it was like really their life story.
That's awesome.
Was that? Did Ray Davis write it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really good.
Nice uh-huh. job, Ray Davis.
What's the other? Oh, they were really into the song Green Onions. And
song rocks.
Yes,
ass.
It does rock ass. Yes, Telstar, Green Onions, and they wanted to just like kind of like they described the dancing. It was like you just kind of like
right. You're not dancing hard because you're not going to mess up your nice clothes.
No, it was not arm dancing.
No,
it was shuffle back and forth,
leaning back and forth, leaning back and forth.
You're not going to get all sweaty.
Yes, right. Sweat up your nice outfit.
I mean, I would anyway because that's my problem that I have.
Look, there were some chubby mods out there.
I seriously doubt it.
not with those amphetamines,
not
man.
With all the amphetamines. So
yeah, I know.
Original mod culture began to fade away once mod fashions hit the high street.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing about, like, hey, you look sharp, is now, like, we're like, oh.
H&M's now got a million mod out. Come down and buy your mod outfits at the Marks and Spencer's team.
Exactly. Well, in America, the Sears catalog had a Carnaby Street collection.
Yes, you know? Yes, there you go.
And then the show Ready, Steady, Go premiered in 1963.
Ready, Steady, Go.
When your cool secret thing is blasting from ITV every Friday night,
Nix,
it is no,
Nix,
longer
Nix,
cool,
it's no longer cool
nor secret.
The party is over.
It says,
mm-hmm.
Fights with rockers, no matter how trumped up they were in the press, weren't fun for a lot of mods.
Yes.
In 64.
Yes.
And stuff like that, when Carnaby Street is happening and it's like kind of
yeah.
already almost
yeah, like
on
the Beatles are on their way up,
the
all
way
that's happening.
Up, and they're like, I don't want to fight.
Right.
I did not get into this to fight.
I did not get into this to throw or be thrown rocks.
Right.
These are
and
not
they
fighting
also
clothes?
Talked about
yes.
rockers talk would ride up on their bikes next to their Vespas and kick them.
And kick them over.
Kick
yeah.
them over. And
well, because they're slow.
Yes.
I saw several rockers who were like, we were about going fast, and they were about going slow looking good.
Yes.
Yes. I have a tiny story.
Go.
When I lived in Hammersmith, one morning, it was summer, but school was still in.
God damn it.
And so I was up early and walking to school, but it was a bright sunshine, even though it was already early.
As the sun came up at 3.
As the sun yeah. came up, and I'm walking down the mostly empty high street, like King Street in Hammersmith, and I hear vzz behind me. And I turn around, and it was original, older guys uh-huh. on their fucking flawless Vespas with this just like a phalanx of mirrors
uh-huh.
huge and
nice.
They went by me with their jackets and I was just like, I want to go with you, I don't want to go to work this morning.
Please can you
can I just jump on the back of your scooter and take me to Brighton? I want to go.
Did they have like the military parkas and everything?
They had the military
oh,
parkas
yeah.
and all that. Yeah, they just looked 100% and they were, and it was just like two guys out for the day, and I was just like I will go, I will risk myself.
I was like, I will get onto a Vespa with a stranger.
With two strange men, because this, you look so cool.
So cool. So, in 1966, there was a schism in the mod community.
No, mod schisms.
A mod schism. Versus the peacock mods, or smooth mods, were moving and separating away from their more working class counterparts.
Okay.
Known as the hard mods. The peacock mods were less violent.
Kiss at my face, my beautiful face!
Always wore the latest expensive clothes. And the hard mods, that were also known as gang mods, lemon heads, or peanuts.
Lemon heads.
Were, and like, this is 1966, and so I think sort of the class divide kind of was like,
finally it was starting
again.
To, yeah.
And so the hard mods, lemon heads, or peanuts, were once again working class.
Yes.
Working class. And they were identified by their shorter hair, and they wore braces, stay pressed trousers, STA-PREST, stay pressed trousers, and army boots. And by 1968, hard mods were known as skinheads.
I was going to say, and they were skinheads.
I said, but even at the time, these skinheads were not the Nazi kind.
They were not the Nazi kind. They're skinheads, and then there's Nazi skinheads.
Uh-huh, and these were skinheads, and they were...
Oi boys.
They were really into ska.
Uh-huh.
They were still into rude boy culture.
Mm-hmm.
Jamaican blue beat.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the late 70s that skinheads...
Yeah,
Nazi skinheads came.
Yeah, when you're like, are you a skinhead? And they go, ugh.
Yeah, but no, these were different mods.
It was a different mod.
So...
I remember also the first time I went to a pride parade in London, there was like a little cadre of gay skinheads, and they were like not Nazi skinheads, mm-hmm. but it was all these guys wearing, they're like, it was like if you bought, I'm going to buy, the way men's pants are not like a size six, it's like the waist and the leg.
The uh-huh.
So they would wear these jeans that fit their waists and legs, but then stopped like capri length. Right above
it's like a 32 length.
Yeah, it was like a 32, but like it fits my waist and hips,
mm-hmm.
but it stops way like, high up so above my boots.
So your boots can go up
like
really
a 30
high.
Waist and a 24.
right. Yeah. So it was a very interesting look, mm-hmm. but I had never. That pride parade was. I was like, oh, well, I guess an Indian drag queen would dress like a Bollywood star. Oh, gay skinhead. I learned so much that day.
Hey. It wasn't full of churches like the ones.
No shit. There was no churches.
In 1973, one of the original mod bands, The Who,
yes.
released their sixth studio album and second rock opera, Quadrophenia. Here's where I'm going to pause. And Amanda and I have been sisters all our lives.
We have.
We've had many conversations and laughed at many, many things.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those things can only be remembered as a nanosecond snapshot in time.
It's like a gif in my head.
Uh-huh. And one time, I'm assuming it was during the 1992 presidential election,
mm-hmm.
Amanda talked to... Amanda was talking in a Ross Perot voice. Talking about... And then The Who realized their second rock opera album, Quadrophenia. Anyway.
I don't know why we were doing this, but I also remember this.
Yes, it was Ross Perot talking about Quadrophenia.
Now, here's the deal, Quadrophenia.
The Who made this rock opera.
It was much different than Tommy.
It was way different than Tommy.
Didn't have that beans in it, for one thing. None of the beans.
Tina Turner weren't nowhere near this.
No, nowhere.
Too much beans.
It stars the guy... who sings Park Life with Blur. Park Life. He does the narration.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. He's the one who's like, oh, wake up.
Jimmy.
Dirty pigeons. They love a bit of it. And he was on EastEnders for a while.
Oh, of course he was.
Yes, he was.
Well,
I saw him. And when?
Phil Daniels.
And when we went to Glastonbury in 2009 and Michael Jackson died,
uh-huh.
it was the Blur reunion.
Oh,
they had been.
Was he there?
He was. And that was the one. Penny was a huge Blur fan and still is. And so we were excited to be there. But the Saturday night when Blur played, and they hadn't played in a long time, Blur, way better than Oasis. They were playing. And then they started Park Life. And then he comes off.
Shit.
The crowd
went
fucking
insane.
Lost it. And he did the whole Park Life. Because he does the narration. And then they play the music. And they're like, Park Life. And he was also... one Christmas, he got killed in a car crash on EastEnders.
EastEnders Christmas is always...
Jesus, I thought it was in real
Daniels.
Life.
No. Like, no, on EastEnders. The special, like,
and then he was killed on Christmas Day.
Like, love right after story. Glastonbury.
So, yeah, Phil Daniels. Okay, he's the star.
Whispers at Glastonbury. Jimmy. Phil Daniels is dead.
I was at Glastonbury when Phil Daniels... No.
So, okay, according to Wikipedia, because yes. I wrote this part this morning while I was watching part of mm-hmm. Quadrophenia. The narrative... This is the album.
Mm-hmm.
The narrative centers on young working class mod named Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
He likes drugs, beach fights, and romance, and becomes a fan of The Who after a concert in Brighton, which I paused and said, well, that's super meta to put your own... self in your album.
That's right.
Wait, he doesn't become a fan of The Who till after the concert?
This is in the album.
Oh, I see.
In the album. Because Jim, the first song is, it's like, I went back to the doctor, and the reason it's called...
I went to the... No, I thought.
Yes, it's different. It's Quadrophenia, because he has... Because four. It was four personalities.
Not like schizophrenia, it's quadra. Uh-huh.
And it was supposed to be the four personalities of The Who.
Uh-huh.
Keith Moon, Entwistle, Townsend, and Daltrey. So it was, that's Quadrophenia. And Jimmy represents all four of them.
Okay.
And the first song is how he went back to the doctor, so he's already been...
To the show.
To the hospital.
Hospital.
The mental hospital. So he becomes a fan of The Who... In the album,
yes.
After a concert in Brighton, I was like, that's a super meta thing to put in your own album, as is Jimmy's Who-branded parka that he wears throughout the movie. Jimmy is disillusioned by his parents' attitude toward him, dead-end jobs, and an unsuccessful trip to see a psychiatrist. He clashes with his parents over the uses of amphetamines and has difficulty finding regular work and doubts his own self-worth, quitting a job as a dustman after only 2 days. Though he is happy to be one of the mods, he struggles to keep up with his peers, and his girlfriend leaves him for his best friend. Ugh. After destroying his scooter and contemplating society, he takes a train to Brighton, where he had enjoyed earlier experiences with fellow mods. Fights. And
beating up the rockers.
Doing nothing. However, he discovers the Ace Face. And I said, played by Sting at his hottest.
Yes.
At his rent boyest.
Yes. So it's very young Sting.
Very young Sting,
sexy.
Who is the Ace Face. And they talk about their face, which mm-hmm. is like their look.
Uh-huh.
And he's the Ace Face.
Which is what I call my daughter often.
That's true.
Hey, Ace Face.
And so Ace Face Sting led one of the other gangs of rockers.
Yes.
Of mods that beat up rockers. And he goes to Brighton and he realizes that Ace Face, who led the gang, has a menial job as a bellboy.
Uh-huh.
He feels everything in his life has rejected him, steals a boat, uses it to sail out on a rock to overlook the sea. On the rock and stuck in the rain, he contemplates his life, and the ending is left ambiguous as to what happens to Jimmy. A film version was released in 1979.
Hence Sting.
Though the death of Keith Moon nearly canceled the whole
thing.
And I also assume... In the movie, the grimy pie and mash shop and the public baths that were used were unchanged since the war.
These were actual grimy pubs.
Grimy. And since we could not understand a word these guys said, we had to turn on the subtitles, which mercifully saved us from having to see Jimmy's floppy todger in the bath.
they covered it up.
Phew.
Mm-hmm. The movie... led to a mod revival in the 80s, but it was not nearly as cool and subversive as the original.
No, because I'm sure that all the mod clothing had like an 80s taint. So it's slick Italian mini dress, but it's got ruffles and shoulder pads.
Exactly. In 1986,
mm-hmm.
Julian Temple made a movie of Absolute Beginners. And it was a musical, and David Bowie was in it, and it was atrocious.
Horribly bad.
Ray Davies is also in it.
Yes.
And it's just so bad.
I'm going to throw back tiny because...
I have also... Okay, go ahead.
A documentary that... part of the documentaries that I saw said that a scene in the movie is based on a real event.
In the movie
Quadrophenia. They're all... arrested. Uh-huh. A lot of people are arrested and they're taken to court, and Ace Face is up in the dock and they're like, you destroyed property and fought in public, and we put it with like a 25-pound fine. And he's like, oh, is that it? And pulls out his checkbook and writes a check and hands it to the judge. And a guy really did that.
He did.
A mod guy.
Nice.
Really did
that.
So just throwing that in
uh-huh.
there.
I want to talk a little more about the Absolute Beginners book, which mm-hmm. was really, really good. And
did you read it this week or had you read it before?
No, I read it this week.
Okay, cool.
One of the things that it talked about, it said that the mods were much more, as much as the rockers loved American rock and roll,
yes,
the mods were much more open to black music and black culture.
Yes. I think some of the American rock and roll, they like happened to be made by black people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A lot of it wasn't. Like a lot of what they were listening to was also just straight up white people.
Absolutely.
White American rock
yeah,
and
but,
roll. I mean, judging by the film. But
yes.
In Absolute Beginners, when he lives in Notting Hill
mm-hmm.
and with
disgusting grubby Notting Hill
and the book you know, he has a fight with Ed the Ted
uh-huh.
And the end of the book culminates in the Notting Hill race riots.
Oh yes.
Which are
were the Teds killed? We go back onto my
yes head. The Notting Hill race riots, which in reading not only the book but then reading about the book
mm-hmm.
I didn't come up with this on my own
okay.
but you can tell that Colin McInnes saw the Notting Hill race riot.
Yes, yes.
Read all of the newspapers at the time. And so his account, fictional account, is really, good. Really good.
That sounds like a great book. I'm going to have to
and
read it.
And at the end of the race riots, Blitz Baby is, he hates England. He wants to leave because mm-hmm. he's like, why is this happening in England?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's horrified.
It's like, look, we just fought off the fucking Hun. Why are we fighting still?
Why can't we all just get along? He lives in a building at the top of the building with the fabulous hoplite.
Yeah.
Mr. Cool, who is half black.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a dyke named Jill.
Hey!
Who lives on the bottom floor and runs Call Girls.
Hey, all right.
And they all like live together.
Uh-huh.
And then at, like at one point he goes and he talks to this like older mm-hmm. Jewish couple, mm-hmm. you know, and then like ex-Deb of the Year is a posh girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And when the race riots are all happening, he calls them mm-hmm. and he's like, what are we going to do? And they all kind of come together and like, you know,
yeah.
figure it out. But at the end, he's like, fuck this. I want to go. I want to get out of England. This is terrible. And he goes to the airport and he wants to go to Brazil.
Ah.
Because he uses a racial term that rhymes with shade.
Gotcha.
A lot.
Uh-huh. There's lots of them there?
Yes.
Okay.
There's lots of them there. And he wants to go there, but he doesn't have enough money.
Mm.
There's also this whole thing with his mom, who it's
sounds like a really good book.
And he goes, and then he doesn't have enough money, and so he decides to go to Norway because he knows that a lot of black sailors were treated well there.
Yes, okay.
And so as he's at the airport after the race riots, a group of Africans get off the plane, coming to England in their suits,
uh-huh.
and he runs up and welcomes them, that's the end of the book.
Okay,
and so it was set in 1959 and written in 1958.
Wow, that's a good. I love stuff like
it's
that.
Extremely yeah. contemporary.
That's like the movie, my movie, which uh-huh. was like filmed right here at the Ace Cafe.
Exactly. Right. So there was that. The other thing that I saw was a 25-minute modern ballet.
Ooh.
Called Mods versus Rockers. And it
was a Mormon Tabernacle Choir History of the Boy Scouts.
No. What it was I mean, like, imagine, you know, in the West Side Story
uh-huh.
when they're at the dance.
Uh-huh.
This was like a billion times better.
Okay.
And so it's like the
boy.
Yeah.
Crazy boy.
Yeah. And so like, and it's the modern ballet. And so they come in and then like,
cool.
Then they fight, you know, they dance together mm-hmm. and then like
dance fighting.
And then at the end, like the rocker boy and the mod girl run off together. But during the whole thing, there's a fabulous hoplite who's dancing next to sort of a Roman statue of a man.
Uh-huh.
And he's
yes.
kind of dancing alone. He's kind of got his hand
uh-huh.
on the statue. And you're like, yeah. I know
okay,
who you
you're
are.
The gay guy.
You're the gay guy. And he's dancing alone. And at the end, there's like the big scene. And then the mod girl and the rocker guy run off together.
Uh-huh.
And then the cops show up.
Oh, yeah,
and so
yeah.
they ever have to get leave. And then the fabulous hoplite comes over. And one of the rocker guys grabs him. And they walk
Aww.
Out up the stairs.
Yay.
Together. And it came out in like 1965.
Oh, wow.
And,
The yeah. modern ballet did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Even cooler. Uh-huh. I was expecting it, like, it was from 3 years ago.
No, it came out in 1965.
That's
so
even better.
Nice.
Yes. The mod revival of the 80s, which is not nearly as cool.
No.
The Who's first manager, a man named Peter Meaden, Meaden,
mm-hmm.
known as the Mod Father,
Aww.
Gave an interview to NME magazine yes. in 1975 where he said, mod living is an aphorism for clean living under difficult circumstances.
Okay.
And those are the mods.
And the
mod
rockers.
Mod it up.
And the rockers. So my sources were Mods, Rockers, and Bank Holiday Weekend, except for part 3, which was not available.
Which was not, you had to go and look around, and I found the whole thing.
You did?
I did. I found the whole thing in a different, because you could find 1, 2, and 4, and then I was like, fuck this, man. So I went around and found another source
for
the whole
documentary. You got to tell me about this, because okay. I missed part 3.
Okay. That was where the fighting started,
That's
man.
That's where the fighting started, exactly. Absolute Beginners by Colin McInnes, which was so good.
Fine.
A book called Revolt into Style, The Pop Arts by George Melly.
Very cool.
That was written kind of at the time.
Yes, George Melly was a name that I, I recognized.
Meet the Mods, The Mid-Century Fashionistas Who Took Britain by Storm by Chris Altman, which was published August 2nd, 2021 on allthatitsinteresting.com.
Hey.
There was a BBC article called Mods versus Rockers, Two Tribes Go to War.
Yes. That was my favorite Frankie Goes to Hollywood song. It's a good much one. Better than Relax.
It's a good one. And Wikipedia.
Yay! Good stuff.
Mods. And parts of the film Quadrophenia.
And parts of the film Quadrophenia. I did watch Quadrophenia.
That was very good. And I have to say that I enjoyed this week. Usually what we do is radically different, but it was kind of fun this week to do basically
the same ones.
And it's like, we love post-war Britain.
I know, right?
So here we go.
I was like, is there a hat? Trilby. The fur lined hood of your parka.
I would say that combing simple syrup into my hair counts as a hat.
It's more of a helmet.
That's right.
Like the Rockers, there is a hat, there is an outfit, there is a Vespa. It's all there.
Yes. Is there a look to it? 100%.
That's 10 out of 10.
That's 10 out of 10.
Uh-huh. What's on the agenda? Clothes.
Being cool.
Speed. Jazz. Uh-huh. Having fun.
Yes.
Agenda. I'm going to knock it a little bit of points because I don't want to do speed.
Yeah, well.
Am I going to get hazed?
What about jazz, though? I mean, let's be real.
Look.
You are personally, in my experience, a fairly anti-jazz human
being. I am an anti-jazz.
I hate noodly jazz.
But
jazz is a lot of things. And there's a lot of different kinds of music that are called jazz, yes. But I hate the noodle.
Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and like John Coltrane, that kind of, it's like the cool jazz versus hot jazz.
Yes.
I don't know. But if I had to hang out in a club and listen to Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, I would not be furious. Plus, I'm also listening to The Who, The Small Faces, Telstar, and The Green Onions.
And plus, I might be on heroin, which makes jazz much better from what I've heard.
It doesn't really matter at that point.
I think that jazz clubs would be more interesting if they gave you heroin.
There you go.
That's it. Well, I mean, you could say that for basically anything. Like, you know,
but jazz
Jiffy
especially.
Lube.
Jazz especially. Because there are. I mean, that's how they're experiencing it. They are playing to you sounds way different to them.
That's true.
Because they're all on the nod.
Exactly. So.
Okay. Yes.
Am I going to get hazed?
No. A bit. Like, again,
I guess you're going to get ragged on.
Probably lightly, verbally at most.
You're going to get judged on your outfit.
I'm not going to get
what
hazed.
You're going to get
I'm going to get judged.
That's
kicked
right.
over by a passing rocker on their motorcycle.
That's different. Yeah,
not
you're not going to get hazed, but you're going to get judged.
I was like, how much is this going to cost? About a pound a week. So it is affordable. Okay. Non-whites?
Probably not really.
But they wanted them to be, whether they did or not.
First of all, it wasn't like an allowed to join kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Ferdy in Quadrophenia is there, and there were mod blacks. Maybe they were also rude boys.
Yes, but they hung out.
And they were also far more open to not just black culture, but like spending time around.
Right. There's a difference between I love black culture and I will talk to black people.
Right. Yeah. So it's not going to get a huge score, but it's going to get some credit. Legit organization or drinking club? This was a looking good club.
That's it. So it's legit.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody famous?
The Who.
The Who.
That's what I there we go. Care. I was like, the Who. Is this going to be about Jesus?
Absolutely not.
No way.
Absolutely not.
All right.
Well, this will be easy because many of mine are the same.
Okay. So there we go. That's 19.
And that's 2.
That's 25. And that's 8. 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. 31, 32, 30, that's 33.
6.
Okay, so
4, 10, 13.
33 plus
6
is,
oh,
that's
39.
11.
I know that.
16, 40, 30, 11.
I got
58.
I got 52.
Yay!
That's 100. And 10.
And 10. It's not. Hey! I was like, wait a minute. Yes, it's 110.
So it's 110. We always knew we were going to be mods anyway.
Yeah,
there was really no
outfits.
Question.
That was fantastic.
Yay!
Okay, mods.
Mods.
Excellent. Well, fantastic. Thank you for joining us for another week of exploration, excitement.
Western, post-war.
Post-war Western history. Bad, questionable singing, and even worse, math.
Yay.
We love you guys. Thank you for being with us.
We'll
see you soon.
Rate, review, and subscribe.
Go to our
social meds. Madnessmadness.com.
Take a look at our social meds. We're always posting fun stuff. So that's where you see the interesting pictures for real.
I try my best.
You do a great job.
Thank you.
Ready? Find all those social meds at madnessmadness.com.
Oi! Oi!
Madness Madness is hosted by Aaron Byrne and Amanda Clay, with occasional outbursts from Brian Byrne, who is me. Brian Byrne records and edits the show. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Please, if you enjoy the show, rate us and leave a review. Leaving reviews helps people find the show. And the more people listen to the show, the more people you'll have to talk about the show with. I mean, just mull that over. You can also listen to us online at madnessmadnesspodcast.com. You can find links to our social media on madnessmadnesspodcast.com. You can email us your thoughts about stuff at madnessmadnesspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.